up the old eight. Yeah, I was thinking of running a post pattern right up the middle. When I see a hole, you know me, I got to plug it up. Didn't mean to total a damn thing.
Good thing you love it.
That sounds good.
And Mike, in the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101.1 WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like the Shark Club on Ford Road in Canton. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's 5 best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save.
With the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment. This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. Thanks for listening.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We did a Harris poll asking people named Harris if, in fact, they were uncomfortable talking about their reproductive organs, which is what a latest study said.
Is it a difficult subject matter, though?
Not with.
Okay. So if you had, say, a 2-inch by 2-inch cyst on your testicle or something like that, you would not have a problem going over that with your doctor. And how about maybe just a oozing pussy sore on your a shaft of your penis, say, for example? That wouldn't be something you would have a problem discussing.
I don't blame you.
I'm not surprised. Is there something? Yeah, hi, Mr. Harris. Doing a survey today, wondering, are you comfortable talking about your reproductive organs?
Right now, I have company.
That you can set the context for the show by calling in early. Usually what happens is that I give these monologues, as they're called in the business, and then people respond to that, which is okay. But just remember, and I remember a few of you have said, are you going to talk about Iraq again? If you don't want to talk about it, bring up something else. I mean, this is your show as well as mine. I'm the host. I'm the gatekeeper here. But ultimately, you're my co-star. So give me a shout at 313-298-WRIF. You can go to my website at peterwerbe.com, PETERWERBE.com, WERBE.com. If you want to email me, because increasingly we're getting people from around the country, even to some extent around the world, you can email me your opinions. The shorter the better. If you send me like 1,000 words in one paragraph, I can't possibly make any, I can't read it quickly. So it's not going to get read on the air. Shorter is better. Smaller paragraphs are best. CallTalkYes@yahoo.com. CallTalkYes@yahoo.com. So where should we go with all this? Well, it makes the most sense to go where we've gone a lot before, about Iraq, about gay marriage, because all of these things, I mean, they're not going away. Now all this, the Republican smear machine is opening up on Kerry. Oh, he might have had a girlfriend, an intern. And I mean, this doesn't look like it's going to be true, but the right-wing sleaze machine is really going at him for this courageous anti-war work that he did when he came home, a wounded hero from Vietnam, and he looked at what he'd been involved in. He had the capacity to self-examine, to self-reflect on what he'd just gone through as a young man, to see the mountain of corpses of civilians, and to see his own comrades in arms slaughtered. And he became an anti-war veteran. There was a group, a very, very extraordinarily important group called Vietnam Veterans Against the War. And those Vietnam veterans, they led almost every big anti-war demonstration during the late 1960s and the early 1970s. Actually, that's not entirely true. Who always led those were active duty GIs. Soldiers and Army and Marine and Navy and Air Force men that were willing to violate the rules of the armed services to express themselves as citizens. They were citizen soldiers. They weren't willing to submit to the political suppression of their ideas that this Vietnam War was this monstrous mistake that wound up in the deaths of millions because of a lie. This sounds a little familiar, doesn't it? And one of the things I would suggest, if anything comes out of this, is not to believe the politicians until you can really get an extraordinary sense of whether it's true or not. I mean, it's pretty hard. I mean, someone tells you that our ships were attacked over in the Bay of Tonkin, the Tonkin Bay, off of North Vietnam. Well, you think, would they make that up? Of course they wouldn't make that up. But they did. And all those people are dead. And all those veterans that still retain those memories and the dead that were left behind. Yeah, that was because of a lie. And this is because of a lie as well. And now we're just in the hundreds to the, you know, the tens of thousands for Iraqis, because it's always the civilians of an area we're trying to save that wind up to really get pounded. They're the ones that really get chewed. So, I guess if there's a methodology, a method by which you can try to ascertain truth, is when a politician tells you something, whether it's whether he's saying, no, I didn't inhale. Yeah, I took marijuana into my mouth, but I never inhaled it. Remember that was Bill Clinton? I mean, the most preposterous thing. At least when he told lies, they were so self-evident prevarications. So he said, yeah, I mean, I didn't inhale. That was okay. I had this illegal substance. I took it in my mouth. And I just, you know, none of it got into my system. And then he said, I did not have sexual relations with that woman. And, my wife, she took one look at the way Monica Lewinsky was looking at Clinton and said, I can't. She said what he was doing in a very rude manner that I will not repeat on the air. So, I mean, it was self-evidently a lie. Now, actually, if you took a little bit of time and you weren't just willing to submit to authority without questioning it, I mean, this whole lie about Iraq was pretty self-evident as well. But in some ways, it wasn't fair. It wasn't fair because it really demanded that you go to almost a special effort. And I would still suspect, although I've quoted him, I've interviewed him even now that I think of it. If I mention Scott Ritter, you go, wait a minute, I know what band he's in. Yeah, you know, I heard that dude. Now, I mean, Scott Ritter was the United, he was an ex-Marine, big, huge guy, super military man, and he was also United Nations weapons inspector. So, I mean, he said, I mean, and I took him at his word that he had led the inspection through the 1990s. He knew there were no weapons of mass destruction and told everybody that, except 98% of the people didn't listen. Let me see if I can play this. This is what, let me see if this will work. Here's what we heard, and here's why most people believe the Bush lie, because I am going to open up here. Oh, yeah, it's coming. Here we go. Let's take a look.
Ago, UN inspectors concluded that Iraq had failed to amount for large stockpiles of chemical and biological weapons. In last month's declaration, Iraq again failed to account for those weapons.
Biological weapons, with respect to chemical weapons, we know they not only have had them, but that they've used them.
The real threat to peace is Saddam Hussein and his possession of weapons of mass destruction.
Saddam Hussein has got weapons of mass destruction. Saddam Hussein is a threat to America.
We're resting our case on the fact that Saddam Hussein has developed weapons of mass destruction, has them in his possession.
We just discovered undeclared chemical warheads in Iraq.
What happened to the 26,000 liters of anthrax? What happened to the botulin? What happened to the 1.5, 1.5 tons of VX? What happened to the sarin? Proof that he is not disarmed.
I believe Saddam Hussein is a threat to the American people. I believe he's a threat to the neighborhood in which he lives. And I've got good evidence to believe that.
The declaration that he made is proof positive that he's withheld information about his weapons of mass destruction program.
Saddam Hussein possesses some of the world's deadliest weapons.
Is because Iraq possesses weapons of mass destruction, and that is the core of the issue.
We're threatened by the spread of chemical and biological and nuclear weapons.
Nuclear,
every
right,
free nation
sure.
is a potential target.
The world is increasingly seeing this from the United States' point of view, that Saddam Hussein must disarm.
Saddam Hussein must disarm himself of all weapons of mass destruction. Saddam Hussein is not disarming.
He's not disarming.
Saddam Hussein is not disarming. He is a danger to the world.
We know what a disarmed country looks like. And Iraq doesn't look like that. Secretary of State Powell will present information and intelligence about Iraq's legal weapons programs.
My colleagues, every statement I make today is backed up by sources, solid sources. These are not assertions. What we're giving you are facts and conclusions based on solid intelligence. There can be no doubt that Saddam Hussein has biological weapons and the capability to rapidly produce more, many more. And he has the ability to dispense these lethal poisons and diseases in ways that can cause massive death and destruction.
So this was just all a load of crap, wasn't it? And it just goes on and on and on. You can go to chickenhawkcards.com. Chickenhawkcards.com.
This is all well documented.
And it wasn't all well documented. I mean, how could these smart guys, these leaders of government, men with the access to some of the best intelligence in the world, come up with the absolute 180 degree opposite of the truth?
High specification aluminum tubes.
Saddam Hussein recently sought significant quantities of uranium from Africa.
That's a lie.
With respect to the uranium.
See, it just goes on and on. So this is what the American people were inundated with prior to the illegal and now we know unnecessary invasion of Iraq.
Nuclear weapons programs in Iraq.
Oh yeah, here's Condi Rice, big liar.
Uranium from Niger.
Yeah, that was a lie.
After Secretary of State Powell's presentation to the United Nations Security Council, the world knows that Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass.
Oh, man. So this, when they talk about the big lie, or they talk about the, you know, the Hitlerian big lie, what it does, how it functions is to repeat it endlessly through the megaphones of power, that is the media at that time, you know, from, say, August 2000 right up until the invasion. This was a univocal voice. I mean, a single voice of power. With the challenging voices, the Scott Ritters, the Peter Werbys, the peace and social justice movement, that wasn't given any representation to refute this massive misrepresentation, these purposeful lies that have resulted in what we see now. So we went out in demonstrations. And a million people would come to New York City, millions and millions of people throughout the world in little towns. And here, is it still going on?
To the extent there may or may not be weapons of mass destruction.
This is amazing.
I don't know exactly how long it would take to find weapons of mass destruction and destroy them.
So, you know, if you believed it at that time, you almost can't be blamed. But now, there's some garbled quote by Bush, but he never could finish, and I can't remember, wish I had it in front of me, but it, you know, if it's, if you fool me one time, shame on you. If you fool me twice, I guess shame on me. That's what it is. But he couldn't figure that one out, if you've ever seen that quote or heard it. But so, all right, so you were fooled once. You were fooled once, and now you can look at all the polls, and now only about half of the people believe that Bush is honest and trustworthy. I mean, 50% of the people think he's... can't believe this, but a majority of Americans believe Bush either lied or deliberately exaggerated evidence that Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction in order to justify war. That's according to a Washington Post, ABC News.
Prevent the launch of missiles and chemical or biological weapons.
I mean, think about it now.
Terrorists will no longer have a source of weapons of mass destruction in the regime.
I mean, who could stand up to that onslaught if all you are, and most of us are, I mean, we've been successfully fragmented into this atomized population. And when we're at that state, we're easily manipulated. And that's what they want to do with advertisements, with political crap like that they shoot at us. So it's really important to have some frame of reference other than
high confidence that Iraq did indeed have weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, and I mean, because they're saying this endlessly, and if you're passively consuming this through television and, you know, and some radio and some newspaper as well, well, it's hard to stand up to this. So if you have a frame of reference within, say, your family, your neighborhood, your church group, your local peace group, social justice groups, then all of a sudden you've got other people saying, well, did you read Scott Ritter, what he said? He was a United Nations guy. So, that, I mean, the end of all of this, is this still going on?
You'll be told if we do find something. So in good time.
We are not a third-rate intelligence agency. There is nothing doctored in those tapes or in any...
Yeah, there was. So, the point being is that it's hard to stop the onslaught of these politicians that are given a free ride by a medium of such intense communicative power that it can manufacture consent. That's Noam Chomsky's phrase. They can manufacture consent. It's not like a dictatorship. What they do, they go to great lengths to convince us that...
Well, that entire notion is nothing but nonsense. It's the stuff of conspiracy theories.
Well, I see. Maybe this is going on towards the end of it, where they're backpedaling on it all. Anyways, this is at chickenhawkcards.com, chickenhawkcards.com. And it's also it's available on my website, peterwerby.com. All right. So most of the people think now that it... it was a lie. Although most people think that Bush honestly believed Iraq had weapons of mass destruction. He could have, because he doesn't read anything other than these intelligence briefings that Cheney and Rumsfeld give to him. A new low, Bush job approval dogged by weapons of mass destruction questions, economy, and John Kerry. So this goes on and on like that. In terms of... gay marriages. The city of San Francisco has decided that that it's going to issue marriage license for gay people, and they've been overwhelmed by hundreds and hundreds of couples saying they love one another and they want to be officially recognized. They want to say, "I'm a human being, and although we may be in a minority in terms of our sexual orientation, we want to be recognized." And people always say it's legally recognized gives you spousal rights and all that. And of course, that's an issue. But ultimately, and the gay people that I know and that are my friends, what they want is recognition of full standing in the human community. And the fact that the political state, the secular political state, is essentially involved in enforcing religious concepts of marriage is absolutely inappropriate. If people love one another, what the hell is it to the political state who they happen to be or what gender they are? Now, if you're religious and this offends your religious sense, okay, you know, preach against it or, don't do it, obviously. And if it's unaesthetic to you, don't think about it, okay? I mean, it's because it's other people. It's not your deal. And there's enough that is bad within... what you religious people would think be appropriate gendered marriage, man-woman, that oftentimes that's nothing to write home about. And it's a lot like the toothpaste is out of the tube. The toothpaste is out of the tube. Because now people were lining up in Oakland County the other day, and since we were expecting to be rejected, said a disappointed Kathy Schneider, 57, of Ferndale, and as she left arm-in-arm with her partner, Linda Schneider, 58. And some of these people, I mean, it is, on hand, so touching. A couple in San Francisco, I was reading about, been together for 50 years, and they're saying, we'd like to be officially married. We'd like to have this recognition of our lifelong commitment. We didn't get divorced, like half of heterosexual couples do. We've been together for 50 years. And that's what we want. So, these people that think that marriage is under assault because people who are gay want to have the same right of official state sanction, that this is going to unravel heterosexual marriage. I mean, talk about a non sequitur, right? That Latin phrase that means one thing doesn't follow from the other. I mean, how can gay marriage affect heterosexuals that want to get married? I mean, it's preposterous, isn't it? I mean, anybody have an idea? Give me a call, 313-298-WRIF. I'm Peter Werby. Tell me how heterosexual marriage, or that the overwhelming people in this country, since the overwhelming majority of people in this country are heterosexual, how that would erode traditional marriage, man and woman. I don't get it. Let's see. Oh, I just put the... or wait a minute, is this? Yeah, I guess finally the weapons of mass destruction stuff has stopped it. Chickenhawkcards.com. Now, if you are wondering about that particular... Oh, yeah, here. That particular phrase, chickenhawks. These are the people who... this is from a column, Bob Herbert, in the New York Times on February 13th. What was that? Friday. He's talking about a book by James Moore called Bush's War for Re-Election. And Bob Herbert says, Bush favored the war in Vietnam, but he had the necessary clout to ensure that he wouldn't have to serve there. He entered the Texas Air National Guard at the height of the war in 1968 by leaping ahead of 500 other applicants who were on the waiting list. He was eventually assigned to what was called a champagne outfit. The ranks were filled with the progeny of the wealthy and politically influential. So here's the thing, says Bob Herbert. After strolling to the head of the line and putting the guard to the considerable expense of training him as a pilot, Lieutenant Bush didn't even bother to take his duties seriously. He breezed off to Alabama to work on a political campaign. He never showed up as required to take his annual flight physical in 1972, and because of that was suspended from flying. Now, I thought there was some little phrase in here that I thought was... He says, and people say, well, this issue doesn't mean anything. Bob Herbert says in the New York Times, this issue remains pertinent because it foreshadowed Bush's behavior as a politician and an office holder. The lack of engagement, the irresponsibility, and the casual and blatantly unfair exploitation of rank and privilege. The working class fought in Vietnam, died, got wounded, suffered post-traumatic stress syndrome and all of that. George Bush got his butt out of the way. All right, your comments, please. I'd love to hear from you. 313-298-WRIF, or if you'd like to email me, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. If you would like, and you're at a faraway city, I'd appreciate you. In fact, anybody, if you feel comfortable doing it, putting your city of origin, and when you call in, if you give me your first name and your city as well, that would be nice. You don't have to, though. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Here.
Hi.
This is Anthony from Minot. I called you last week.
Sure.
But I just want to talk to you about how it's garbage that they're making this big deal about this Janet Jackson showing her nipple thing when there's people with real problems, people with no health insurance or jobs, and they're spending all this money on Congress and everything to investigate this garbage. I mean, who hasn't seen a nipple? Give me a break.
Yeah, it is pretty weird. I mean, even if you... say it was inappropriate.
Right.
So what? I mean, I think, isn't that the first thing that any kid sees?
Okay, and who really young watches the Super Bowl anyway? I mean...
Well, I mean, listen, on one hand, I think it was inappropriate. It came at dinner time. There are kids watching, and there are parents that have feelings about that, and I don't think they should be subjected to that.
Yeah.
You know, well, let me tell you this, Andy. There's only a few words that you can no longer say on radio.
Right.
And I hear morning shows, including ours here, say words that I still won't say. I mean, I was around when you couldn't say them, and I think I don't have to say... I don't know. Can't even say them. I mean, I still say PO'd, where they say, I'll say it. I can't do it. I can't bring myself to it.
Pissed off.
Yeah, okay. They say that on mainstream television now, and I still...
Well, I mean, that's no big deal. I mean, this is freedom. I mean, that's what it's all about. I mean,
yeah.
You might as well become communist if you don't want to have freedom, you know?
Well, I don't know. There are words that that sometimes have great power to them, and then after a while, they lose it. And for instance, in England, the word bloody, if you said, 40 or 50 years ago, if you said bloody in public, it was like saying the F word here. But now it's like darn.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I agree that there's, you know, they're shocked. They're absolutely shocked. All right. Thank you, Andy. Let's see. Here's the George Bush quote that he really couldn't do it. Debbie, listening in Boston, wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Oh, it says, webcasting the show is really choppy, so maybe you already got this, but in case not. There's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you, fool me. You can't get fooled again. He's listening to The Who, right? You know that old song, I won't get fooled again. No, he messed it up, yeah, because he's trying to think on his feet. He's not real good at that, nor sitting down. But it should be, fool me once, shame on me, or shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me. All right, where are we going? Line two. Thank you. Rick Fox, by the way, is our producer, as usual, and our phone screener. Rick, you can be rocking tonight as well, so after 2 a.m., you can rock out with Rick Fox on WRIF. Hi, this is Night Call, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hello, Peter. This is MD in Westland.
Hi, MD in Westland.
Well, I got two subjects I want to touch on.
The
first one I'm going to do really quick.
What's that?
Okay, the first one is the fact about gay marriages. As you know, in the past, you've been getting calls from me for over 20 years now. I used to be a gay basher, but I've sort of changed my tune. I look at it this way. Any of those guys that want to be gay, hey, that's fine, because you know what that does? I embrace the idea, because you know what it does for me?
I know.
It leaves a lot less competition for me and other straight guys, because there's a lot more women available and less competition for them.
Well, you're probably right. Thank you, MD. That's one way to look at it. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. All right, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, this is Timmy from Livonia.
Hi, Timmy.
Hey, I just wanted to let you know that George Bush and Tony Blair have been nominated for the 2004 Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, they have, but by some right-wing legislator in Norway where the prize is given out. I mean, I don't know. They gave it to Henry Kissinger, who probably is one of the larger war criminals of the... I mean, I guess he doesn't compare with the really big guys, but he's there. I mean, he's like at least at the level of Milosevic. Nah, maybe higher. I don't know.
True. I also just wanted to say that I'm 20 years old and I didn't vote in the last election. It was so controversial, and I've never been so excited to vote in this one. So whoever's Democratic, I'm just going to vote for him.
Well, that's a lot of people. They're saying anybody but Bush, that certainly John Kerry, being in the Senate, has enough warts and probably enough to make him a little distasteful to you know, some progressives, but Bush with a second term and not having to worry about getting reelected, whew, that's scary.
Yeah, thanks. All right, one more thing now.
Sure.
All right, legalize it.
All right. Well, I had some thought about that, and I'll have to think of it later. All right, thanks, Timmy. Legalize it. What does that have to do with something? All right. Thank you. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air.
Okay, how you doing, boy?
Good.
You know, you're always so happy to hear from me, and
I am.
I appreciate it. But one of the things I wanted to talk about tonight was the, it's actually been about 2 years, and I'm going to hold you to your comment about 2 years ago, and this relates to concealed weapons permits. I think initially your comment was you didn't want anybody, quote unquote, packing next to you in a movie theater. And to date in Michigan, there hasn't been any incidents with people that are carrying concealed weapons in Michigan that have had any incidents. And moreover, they've, if anything, you know, backed up police. All these people that carry are, you know, legal. They're law-abiding citizens, and they've helped the police.
Well, you have to be a law-abiding citizen to qualify to have a concealed weapons permit. And I said at the time, I didn't see any need for it. And the idea of just creating or having more people carrying weapons in this state did not intrigue me in the slightest. As it turned out, very few people have actually applied. I haven't heard of any incidences, negative or positive, I can't imagine, and maybe some police officers listening can call 313-298-WRIF and tell me if they would like citizens that have concealed weapons permit coming to their aid with gats drawn. I would think, Funky, that if you were trying to help a police officer in a situation that consisted of guns being drawn, that you might be at big risk yourself. I would think if you have a concealed weapons permit, you ought to just keep it wherever it is.
Absolutely, Peter. I agree with you, but your original comment 2 years ago indicated that you thought there would be road rage, and I think you said the old west mentality where there'd be guns drawn in the street.
It doesn't sound like what I said. In fact, I said pretty much what I did. I said that there was not a need beyond what was already established at the time for people to carry weapons. That a lot of the people that want to carry weapons worried me that there have been increased incidences of gun violence in other states where they're very prevalent, particularly like Louisiana and Texas. And the fact that there has been not much, or maybe nothing, I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen any statistics officially one way or the other, that I think a lot of it has to do with not very many people applied. I think it's in the hundreds.
Hey, Pete.
Yeah.
We agree to disagree, and as always, I love you. You know it, baby.
All right. Thank you, Funky. Appreciate your call. All right, one more, and then we'll take a break. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter, I just want to say thanks for keeping it real all this time in Detroit.
Well, thank you.
I would like to say about gay marriages, or at least ask you about this. Back in the 70s, when lawyers really got involved with, what is and what is not a marriage, and what, can be broken, what can't be broken, that kind of changed how we get married. I mean, we can get married and then get divorced 2 years later because of the lawyers. Our parents, our grandparents never had that option. I'm just wondering, legally, is there any difference now between a civil union and a marriage?
Yeah, there is, and it may be just in the name. I mean, I know that the Massachusetts Supreme Court, which kind of got all of this rolling, said that that civil unions did not meet constitutional muster. That is, that it still created a separate category for people. And the idea, what we call the democratic revolutions that occurred in the British colonies in 1776 and French Revolution, English Revolution, all of those things, were about ending elite control and extending democratic rights. Because initially, I mean, if the United States was still like it was then, we'd think this place was awful. I mean, the only people that could vote were white men with property. That there were slaves and on and on, so that there's been this battle against the conservatives, including the conservatives that mostly, the conservatives want us to stay a colony of England at that time. But the conservatives have fought every move to extend democratic rights and full recognition to, every category of people that's come along. And so this is part of this process. And the people that really believe in the democratic revolution, small d, not the Democratic Party, but the democratic revolutions that inscribed on its banners, at least in France, fraternity, liberty, equality, are going to keep pushing. And the battles have been so big, the casualties have been so heavy, but we've always won. Hey?
Oh, yeah. But then again, what really constitutes a marriage? Is there any legal writing right now that says male or female?
Oh, yeah.
I'm 18 years old. You got to be like,
well, there's age. That seems to make sense. How many, but some of these polygamists, people that, men that are marrying a lot of women because of their religion, they say, well, wait a minute, we're consenting adults. I mean, am I awful? I don't care if a guy marries eight women. If they want to do it, and everyone is adult, and there have been some problems with some of those Mormon marriages. I mean, very, very young women, arranged marriages, stuff like that really smack of coercion. But, there's ways to deal with that, and there's already laws on the books. There's some societies where they have what they call polyandry, where there is, one wife and several husbands.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't get in other people's business. And I might look at them. I mean, if somebody said to me, I've got three wives, I think that's real weird. You know,
right, but I wouldn't kick them out of my house for dinner, you know?
No. Like,
okay,
well,
I'll have a glass of wine with you. I'm just not going to marry four other wives.
Yeah, but on the other hand, instead of having just two people come over, you have four.
Oh, that's true.
All right, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
After 25 years in business, Leather Limited has become the nation's second largest chain of leather stores and has filed bankruptcy. The remaining leather coat inventory of 40 unprofitable stores has been brought back to the Detroit area for immediate liquidation. Truckloads of finest quality leather coats will be liquidated for just pennies on the dollar, and most coats are just $28 to $98. This is the world's largest leather coat liquidation in history and will run for a limited time only. Leather Limited has temporarily rented the former F&M drugstore location at 13 Mile and Woodward for this first-time-ever gigantic special event.
Over 20,000!
Finest quality leather coat will be liquidated for just $98 or less. Also included in this bankruptcy sale, leather pants and skirts at $4 enough. Briefcases and purses at $6 enough. Wallet, glove, belt, and more at $4 enough. Don't miss this once-in-a-lifetime bankruptcy leather coat liquidation on Woodward Avenue, just north of 13 Mile Road. The gigantic Leather Limited leather coat liquidation, daily 9 till 9 for a limited time. 13 Mile and Woodward.
Look for the former F&M store!
So hurry in!
Hey, Dave, what's going on?
Not much with me, but it looks like lots going on at Mr. Jones. This place looks awesome, man.
Yeah? I thought you knew. That guy Michael Abrams, who owns Snooker's Pool and Pub, just bought Mr. Joe's.
Oh, Mr. Joe's was okay before, but now it's great. It has new plasma TVs, big screens everywhere. Before you know it, this old sports bar will look brand new.
Cool. We'll never miss a game, and we still get great food. There's nothing like a Mr. Joe's burger.
Oh, new TVs, new menu. Mr. Joe's sure is a sweet place to hang out with friends. Oh, hello. I think maybe we'll be making some new friends here, too.
Oh, yeah. I think we'll be spending some time at Mr. Joe's.
New plasma screen TVs, big screens for big games, great new menu, including the famous Mr. Joe's burger. You can get it all at the newest member of the Snookers family, Mr. Joe's on 12 Mile in Southfield, between Telegraph and Northwestern Highway, open till 2 a.m. Visit Snookers Pool and Pubs at any location, Livonia, Royal Oak, Utica, East Point, and Southgate. And don't forget about McVee's in Southfield. Snookers Pool and Pub, McVee's, and Mr. Joe's, great places for a good time, guaranteed.
His name is Marcus Allen Washington. Today is his birthday. He weighs just 1 pound, 3 ounces. A breathing machine helps him breathe because his lungs weren't developed before he was born. If you could see this baby, you would see him wince in pain. He lies on his back, connected to tubes and drips and medicine. This is one of the possible effects of smoking during pregnancy. Call 1-800-537-5666 today for your free expectant mother's quick kit. It's designed specifically to help women who are pregnant or are planning on becoming pregnant soon to quit smoking for good. You may not worry about what smoking does to you, but think about what it could do to your baby. Quit before you get pregnant, or if you are pregnant, quit now. Call 1-800-537-5666 today. No one should be born a smoker.
This message brought to you by the Michigan Department of Community Health and the Michigan Association of Broadcasters.
I took that aptitude test at dintymore.com, and it said I should be a brain surgeon. I don't know. It sounds pretty tricky to me. Then one day I made some Dinty Moore beef stew because, well, it's a good hearty meal that's quick and easy. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yeah, so I got this idea. The time I saved making Dinty Moore could be applied to learning brain surgery. Thanks, Dinty Moore. An excellent choice.
Enjoy your day to the fullest and stock up on America's number one beef stew, Dinty Moore Beef Stew, at your local Kroger. Dinty Moore Beef Stew is like a home-cooked meal without the effort. If you're an active skier or happy at home, Dinty Moore Beef Stew is the simple way to enjoy a delicious, well-balanced meal. Just heat and eat, and now it's available at Kroger. Pick up easy, great-tasting Dinty Moore Beef Stew at Kroger today to enjoy a quick meal anytime. Dinty Moore Beef Stew at Kroger, an excellent choice.
3.75%. Hi, this is Ray Vinson, founder of American Equity Mortgage. 3.75%.
Just when you thought rates couldn't get any lower, they did. At American Equity Mortgage, where we're now offering 3.75%, whether you're a homeowner with perfect or less than perfect credit, American Equity Mortgage can help you consolidate your high-interest credit card balances and other costly debt into one new low-interest home loan with one new low monthly payment. At American Equity Mortgage, you can get the financial peace of mind that you want. Fast and easy at 3.75%, I guarantee you'll save hundreds of dollars every single month. Before rates go up, call American Equity Mortgage and ask about that 3.75%. Call now, 888-229-7699. Call American Equity Mortgage today at 888-229-7699.
Rate subject to change. APR 4.163. Rate subject to increase after confirmation.
Open evenings till 8.
Do you feel like half the man you used to be? Do you feel tired and irritable? Are you losing your sex drive? If so, you could have low testosterone.
I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's health specialist. Testosterone levels can fall rapidly after age 35, but now you can boost your testosterone naturally. Introducing Testostazine, the powerful new testosterone-boosting system I developed for men who are starting to feel their age. Testostazine supports your body's ability to produce testosterone the way you did when you were younger, so you can restore your energy, youthful sex drive, and staying power. Testosterone keeps a man energetic and sexually confident. You can feel that way no matter what your age. Testostazine can help.
Call now for your risk-free confidential trial of testosterone. Call 1-800-807-8108. 1-800-807-8108. Guaranteed to work for you or your money back. Call 1-800-807-8108. Results will vary.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you're on hold trying to get on the show, please stand by. If the lines are busy, please try again.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. We're talking about the this coming contest between two Vietnam-era men, assuming that John Kerry is what they call the presumptive Democratic candidate, a hero during the war itself, and to me a hero when he came back and led the anti-war movement as part of the Vietnam veterans against the war. Man that had all the creds to do it. Wasn't any hippie draft dodger, right? I mean, not to take anything away from the hippie draft dodgers. There's enough of those. Also, what else? Oh, yeah, we're talking about gay marriages and kind of the toothpaste is out of the tube. That now people are, gays are going to their county clerks, including here in Oakland County, and saying, hey, I want to be married. I'm a human being. I love a human being. We want to be married. Why are you discriminating against me? Also, one of our regulars over the years, Funky, said, hey, I had to admit that there hasn't been any incidences of or problems around the fact that now people can just go in and get a concealed weapons permit. Let's go back to our phones. Hi, it's WRIF, and you're on the air.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing this evening?
Doing well, thanks.
Good. Hi, my name's Bob. I'm a photojournalist with Fox 2 News.
Well, welcome.
And thanks. I've been a longtime listener. You're doing a great job, and don't want to take up too much of your time. I just wanted to sort of refute, I think his, your caller's name was Funky, who called about the CCW incident.
Right.
And I just would like to say at the outset, you know, I'm a Michigan guy, a hunter. I bagged a buck this year. I have friends with CCWs, and I'm a gun owner. So I don't say this as a you know, one of those left wing liberals. But we were on a story down in Taylor on Friday afternoon, beautiful sunny day, and there was a guy going through the car wash in a pickup truck, and the attendant wouldn't let him go through because he had some debris in his bed and didn't want it to spray around in the car wash. So they told me he had to back up in line. Well, it was a pretty busy day. The gentleman two cars back in a brand-new Cadillac took issue with that, and words were exchanged in a heated argument, and the truck driver pushed the guy, the 65-year-old man, and he pulled out a concealed weapon.
Whoa.
and fired six shells into this guy's truck. And but for the grace of God, he wasn't hit or anyone else wasn't hurt. But he was arrested. Taylor police have the truck in impound, and on Saturday morning he was arraigned and charged with attempted murder.
Wow. Well,
so,
does the exception?
And he was a legal CCW carrying. You know, he had a legal CCW, and we talked with friends and relatives, and honestly, you know, they said, oh, well, he's very, very good with his guns and respectful. Gee, he has over 100 weapons. And the police went to his house, his apartment, and he did indeed have over 100 different weapons. But very responsible, of course.
Well, very responsible till he loses his temper. I guess what struck me was need. In fact, I found usually the people that are the most interested in having guns always seem to be the ones that need them the least.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, as I said at the beginning, I have a friend, a good friend, who has a concealed weapons permit. And you know, I said, well, why do you have that? And he says, well, for defense. You know, if I'm somewhere where I need to defend myself. I said, you know, and I go to, you know, as a photojournalist, I go into some bad areas, in all kinds of places, and I've never had a problem. And I said, well, if you're in a bad area, the best thing to do is leave.
Yeah,
they don't, you know, it's people don't have common sense, it seems.
No, I always use the dictum that if you're in a place where you think you need a weapon, you shouldn't be there.
Absolutely.
Because, like you, and I mean, sometimes professionally, sometimes just socially, I go into poor neighborhoods in Detroit, Hamtramck, Highland Park, downriver, and it never occurred to me that I would have a need for a weapon. I could imagine if someone said, well, what if, you know, gave me a whole what if, and I could say, yeah, that's very possible. But being a gun owner myself, I understand the awesome capacity that they have. And I don't want this. I mean, it's one thing if you're out, target shooting or skeet shooting or hunting or something like that.
Absolutely. I enjoy all of those sports. They're
right.
Can be a lot of fun and when enjoyed responsibly. But I don't want the guy behind me in the car wash shooting at me, and I'll be caught in a crossfire, or my wife, or my children, or anyone else.
Well, the argument? Let me play the devil's advocate here. This is so we've had this for a couple of years now. There's hundreds, maybe there's not a lot. I mean, that's given the size of the state of Michigan. Most people don't want this machine that whose only purpose is killing. Or confrontational in its very nature. So to me, it's bad vibes. I mean, we're talking a little about the 60s and 70s, so I'll use the phrase. It's kind of bad vibes to have that on me, not with the purpose I'm going to see whether I can hit a clay target or a bullseye or an animal or something like that, but rather I'm going to have it because I'm always going to be a little bit there thinking if someone,
things happen when you have a gun that can't happen if you don't.
That's right.
You can't shoot somebody if you don't have a gun, accidentally or otherwise.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, Bob.
I just wanted to point that out. Want to divert the conversation because I think the important subjects, and while that is important, I think that we need to remain focused on Iraq and what's going on in this country, and is it really the direction that we want to go?
Wait a minute, I talk about focus. This is one of my major problems in broadcasting. Always I said I was going to play the devil's advocate. I never got to that. My point being is this is one incident among the thousands of people that that have it. So the argument would be, look, this is an isolated incident. This is one guy flipped out. So why should those of us who feel, for good reasons or bad, that we are safer or feel more secure for ourselves and our family, why shouldn't we be allowed to have, a weapon?
Well, I would agree with you that perhaps maybe that it is atypical. It's maybe something that we know about because we were there and we were covering it, and you saw it, live on Fox 2 News at noon. But I wonder how many incidents we don't hear about, and maybe someone from law enforcement could comment on that if they had some idea. I really don't know because that's a good point. It could very well be an atypical sort of situation.
Well, wait a minute. Thanks to our listeners. Here's Tom in Ann Arbor at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Just a couple of quick facts from Michigan State Police official reports on concealed weapons licenses, CCWs, from July 2001 to, where is the last date here? There was considerably more than I thought. 27,500. For both years, about 2% of the total number of licenses issued were either denied or revoked. Also, there were 92 violation charges in 2001, 2002, and 226 violation charges in 2002 and 2003. Tom says this strikes me as being significant growth. Yep. However, 2 years does not make a trend. Hope this is informative. Very. So, Funky, we're here. We're talking about hundreds of violation charges.
Maybe not that atypical.
Yeah. Thank you, Bob.
All right. Hey, Peter, we'd love to come in there sometime and do a show with you and see you on Fox 2.
Hey, let's do it.
I would love to come down there one night, one Sunday, and with a reporter and cover your show and do some sort of special. That would be a fantastic thing for me. Well, I've been a big fan for a long time.
Can I talk bad about Rupert Murdoch?
He signs my checks, but I can't imagine that anyone would take issue with anything that is fair and balanced.
Hey, Bob.
And I'll leave it at that.
All right, let me put you on hold, and let me have our producer, Rick Fox, give you a phone number.
Fantastic.
Okay? All right, hold on.
Have a great show.
Yeah. Does that mean I'll have to... can you get on with Bob and give him, do you know my number offhand? All right, just give him the main, our main riff number. Okay, let's continue on. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Hey.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, this is Ralph down in Newport. You posed a question earlier about how the recognition of gay couples, the legal recognition, would impact the heterosexual world.
Right.
I got a couple comments about that.
Please.
This kind of throws back to what you said about how a bad word that was traditionally very powerful can lose that power.
Right.
I believe being homosexual is wrong. As that's more and more socially acceptable, it is going to become more and more socially acceptable. Myself, I don't want to see it. I don't want to have anything to do with it. I don't want my children to grow up in a world that's like that.
Like what?
I may have a son that goes to school, and by that point in time, maybe it's, I have third and fourth graders, instead of, Timmy and Samantha kissing on the playground, you got Tim and John. I don't need that. I don't need it to evolve to that, because that would impact my world.
Well, let me tell you, first off, I think you're right, that if there was a total acceptance and total... legalization, and people weren't referred to as a gay activist or a gay spokesperson, but it was just it was just accepted in the way that that, for instance, African Americans were once discriminated against and now they're not. If it was like that, I probably would be more gay marriages and more gays, people that had, I don't know what, ambivalences or impulses or whatever, but they wouldn't suppress it, because they would say, I don't have to. It's not a bad category to be in. It's an okay category. But most people are driven by biology, and the species wants to reproduce itself. And you do that through heterosexuality, through birth. Although, there are species that when they become overpopulated, there is a rise among animals in homosexual activity. So, I mean, it's got to be natural. People do it, and people always have done it, and all these societies that didn't like it had to make rules against it, so there must have... it's as natural as heterosexuality.
Well, where... Is that decided on social acceptance, that it's normal?
Well, I don't know. Well, I mean, normal. I know wonderful, wonderful gay couples that are involved in these very, very nice relationships, and I know heterosexual couples that it's like the hottest room in hell. Yeah, I mean.
Well, the opposite can be true as well. I mean,
yeah.
I'm not going to say I hate people that are gay. It's not like that. I know people that are, and I get along with them fine. I don't want to see it. I don't want to have anything to do with my world. What they do behind closed doors is their business.
But yeah. Why should I
be socially forced to accept something that I don't?
Well, wait a minute. How are you socially, if you say you know gay people and you know there's gay people out there, and if you lived in cities like New York or San Francisco particularly, or you lived even in Ferndale and Royal Oak, where there's probably a higher percentage of gay people, you would know that there's gay people all around. So what? You know, you in families where there's gay children, there's no pattern to it. You'll have an intact mother and father, and you'll have three kids, and two of them get married to the opposite sex, and one says, "Mom and Dad, I'm gay." I don't. There's great. I mean, it's not like someone says, "You know, I want to be a Baptist or a you know, a doctor or something like that." It's not like a choice. I mean, people are, the drive is you know, very deeply biological.
Okay, I can agree with that to a certain percentage. But then kind of on the flip side, what about, okay, let's see, the original question was how the homosexual, you know, recognition legally of their relationship would impact the heterosexual
right.
community.
Right.
Okay, so what happens when it's okay to be gay, you know, it's normal, this, that, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, some guy, oh, I'm gay. Well, I know guys that say that, but they're not. Okay, is that more and more socially acceptable that, oh, well, there, you know, we can be married now, we can do this and do that, as, you know.
There's people that...
What happens to all those, you know, the younger guys or even girls, impressionable, it's okay, they're not, but they go into it.
Well,
you know, they might do the cool thing to do, and as far as how it would impact heterosexuals in society, I think that up and coming, that will, well, I think it's already started to happen, and I think it'll just...
Well, I don't know. I mean, you may be right, you may be wrong. I mean, as I said, it doesn't have any impact on me whatsoever, and it's the nature of animal species to reproduce itself. So the only reason that maybe Gaia has this recognition that the human population is grown to an extent that it's endangering the resources of the planet itself and the other species, and so it's going to drive the birth rate down. I don't know. Hey, I got to go. Thanks.
You're locked on at WRIF.com. We'll get back to more Rip Rock in just a moment.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We tried calling this guy, got this woman, and she made the mistake of hanging up on us.
Why'd you hang up?
I have company and I am busy.
Oh, well, you say usually when people hang up, I don't know if you're new, if you just get citizenship, usually people say goodbye before they hang up the telephone.
I told you I had to go.
I remember you were laughing about the erection, but...
No, I said I had to go,
no,
and I'm hanging up. Goodbye.
People, do you usually, yeah, say goodbye.
Wait,
that's good. You learn.
Yeah, okay.
She didn't have any company. What
oh,
is she
God,
talking
no, she
about?
Company.
Liar.
Yeah, I know. People lie on a...
Wait, let's call back and say we're a caterer. And is there's nobody over here, they'll say, liar!
Let me tell you what's really going to happen. You're going to call up as a so-called caterer, and she's going to be, I just talked to you, I said goodbye.
You never know.
If it's in Vegas as a bet, I'm not so sure I'm going to put any money on this.
Hello?
Yeah, I'm looking for you there, sir. This is a caterer. You having a party over there?
Not today.
By God.
You lied. You said you had company, lady.
I have company, but I don't have a party going
That's
on.
That's hilarious.
You
lied.
You lied.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
That is.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101.1 WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
Riff.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine Online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Amigos and Taylor in Woodhaven.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine Online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff. 101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's five best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
We'll get back to more Rip Rock in just a moment.
This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com.
Thanks for listening. Twice is nice. Tuesday on the Riff.
Everyone, listen up.
Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff rock bands.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Tuber Tuesday.
Double the Riff Rock.
Double the Riff Prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the Riff. From 101 WRIF. It rocks.
It really rocks.
Now, begin transmission.
Here comes the music. It's on
the Riff. The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine Online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Pelosino's Pizza and Grinders with 18 locations, one near you. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine Online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's five best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save.
With the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We were talking with Robert Porche about some of the reasons Barry Sanders left the Lions, especially the non-signing of Kevin Glover.
Kevin Glover, you heard him a lot, especially when his replacement was Jim Pine,
mm-hmm.
who was at the time the guard for Tampa Bay. And what was so funny about the whole situation was the fact that whenever we would play Tampa Bay, Jim Pine would be the guy that was singled out as the weakest link on their offensive line that we were always trying to get a singles on.
Ouch.
From a defensive line standpoint, everything was geared towards getting our tackle one-on-one with Jim Pine because our coaches felt that he could not, you know, block our tackles ever. So, you know, we were just like, okay, this guy is a guard and he can't stop anybody. How in the heck is he going to take a football and snap it in between his legs and then block somebody? I know that was one thing that really, really, really rubbed him the wrong way.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
I hear you.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101.1
WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
Riff.
You're listening to 101 WRIF Detroit, a greater media station broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com.
Contrary to what I said, that it wouldn't have any effect on heterosexual marriage, he said if this is accepted, that there would be more expression of gay life. And I said, yeah, there probably will be, but, so what? What's going to happen bad? And there may be even a manner in which the species doesn't even see a necessity for propagating. There's enough people. What the hell? Infant mortality rate is rising. That means how many live births per thousand. And this is for the first time in 40 years under Bush that infant mortality rates in the United States increased. So it's the other way around. I mean, you want a low figure. And this is one of these things that you got to really connect some dots. I mean, it has to do with increasing poverty in the United States. I mean, one of the reasons the United States has such a high infant mortality rate is because, unlike all the other Western industrial countries, the United States has so many poor people, regardless of the total wealth and that the nation has. And it's one of those things that confounds people when they say this is the greatest country on earth, for instance. And the country with the lowest infant mortality rate, in other words, the best one, is Japan. Now get what's happening here. Then Sweden, then Iceland, then Singapore, then Finland, then Norway, then Andorra, a little country in surrounded by Italy, Germany, the Netherlands, Austria, Switzerland, France, Slovenia, Macau, Spain, Belgium, Luxembourg. Well, you're going to say, where's the United States in this? Well, the United States has the, what would it be, the 42nd. It's number 42 in highest infant mortality rates. So it's really a disgrace. And here it says it's just a slight increase. It went from 6.8 to 7.0 from 2001 to 2002. So these economic policies that benefit the wealthy at the expense of the middle class and the working class, and particularly the poor, wind up in dead babies. It's that simple. And yet, you know, no one's bothering to connect these dots. I thought we were like 14th. I was staggered. This is from the 2003 CIA World Factbook, by the way. So I thought we'd be maybe above the Czech Republic or the North Mariana Islands or Hong Kong or San Marino or Portugal or something. But no, we're way back of that. Now, in terms of spending on health care, that the man who is essentially the dictator of Iraq, we had a mean, awful, murderous dictator. Now we have one that's much more benign, but still a dictator. And that's Paul Bremer, who is the overseer, what would you call him, the proconsul. Anyways, he was forced to admit, under criticism, that the coalition has failed to provide proper funding for the country's health system after coming under a barrage of criticism in Baghdad from top doctors. There was a meeting of doctors. I mean, the health care system has gone from one of the best in the Middle East in 1990 to just this devastated system where there is virtually nothing available that we would call a modern, to make it what we would call a modern health system. The United States now, I mean, you're getting all this? The United States, as it has already contributed $500 million, $500 million to the Iraqi health system. Well, because of George Bush's illegal and unnecessary war, we owe these people that. I mean, that's the case. But in the meantime, we're having a rising infant mortality rate. We are, I don't even know, I have to turn too many pages to get to where the United States. Well, we beat out Croatia, Cuba, South Korea, Martinique, you know, places like that. New Caledonia, the Cayman Islands, Puerto Rico, Costa Rica, Estonia. But everyone else, every other country, we're way behind. So we're spending $500 million on Iraqi hospitals and medicine, and that's nowhere near enough. And yet here, I mean, this is the result of the Bush War, because they had all those weapons of mass destruction, which they turned out not even to have. Well, things are getting a little better. Pepsi is back in Iraq. I don't know what happened to Coke. Maybe they edged out Coke or something like that. But also an Iraqi factory, this article says, an Iraqi factory reflects U.S. recovery effort. Turns out it's a cigarette factory. And guess who's paying these cigarette factory workers? You and me. In the meantime, that Governor Granholm is talking about taxing cigarettes here. Cigarettes, I was in a restaurant. I was in the Clausen Steakhouse, which is pretty cool for a vegetarian, right? Last night. And there was a cigarette machine there, and cigarettes are now $6 a pack. What is she talking about, putting like $2 a pack on it or something? Anyways, university fees are being raised. The schools are going to have to fight over the pittance that is there. And it's not a matter of getting mad at Jennifer Granholm. She doesn't have any option. The money isn't there. So in the wealthiest country in the world, the infant mortality rate is going even higher than the disgraceful rate it's already at under George Bush. We don't have enough money for our schools. We increasingly, middle-class families, forget about working class or poor, middle-class families are not going to be able to afford university education. And we're spending billions to rebuild the infrastructure of another country that was illegally, and now it turns out, unnecessarily attacked. All right, let's go back to our phones. I'd like to hear from you. 313-298-WRIF. My website, peterwerbe.com, PETERWERBE.com. And email at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. All right, it's night call, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, Peter, how are you doing today?
Doing well. Thanks for joining us.
I appreciate this. First time I've called in. I've listened to you consistently, though. But I got a tell you about the whole gay marriage issue that's going on right now. You know, the only thing I could say is define normal. I mean, quite honestly, you know, what's normal? Something that may be normal to myself may not be normal to another individual or a group of individuals.
Right.
You know, to each his own. You know, let these people just, if they want to get married, let them get married. I mean, there's no reasoning why they shouldn't. I mean, that would be like somebody saying that I couldn't get married to my wife.
Well, I mentioned last week that that there was a time when the laws of the United States forbid blacks and whites from marrying.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely asinine that people are so shallow that they can't accept that it's out there, and they can't accept the fact that, you know, that group of individuals, you know, they want to take a step forward, and they want to have... like you were talking about earlier, recognition, and I don't believe there's any reasoning why they shouldn't.
Yeah, you know, I was just listening to some radio, and there were these shrieks of joy. I think it was in Boston. No, it was in San Francisco, and the delight and the joy that these couples committed to one another. Some of them, like I said, for over half a century, that they were finally said, "Yes, you are human beings," and. And then on the other hand, these people's like, ar, 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 you know, like, I don't know. I mean, there are fears that, on the part of people that both, you know, have religious opposition to homosexuality. And the last caller before the break from Newport, who is fearful of a world in which everything isn't real patterned and isn't and gives too much leeway to things that he thinks are. You know, the way he said that are going to impact on his world negatively. Well, I don't know. I mean, you can't, I mean, you can make that argument about almost anything. This, you know, people that have previously been discriminated against. A lot of people didn't want to see women have the vote. You know, they said that's going to, you know, that's going to, in fact, they said that's going to destroy the family if you let women vote, for instance.
Well, exactly. You Still know, have... I, like I said before, you know, it's more of a, you know, a shallow outlook on the whole issue. You know, I mean, it's, you know, in my honest opinion, it's almost a racist outlook against the gay community. I mean, it's, you know, if you don't understand them or you're scared of it or it's not a disease, it's not a virus, you're not going to catch it.
Right.
You know, by all means, you know, give them what they want. Let them get married. There's no reason why it's not going to hurt you or I or anybody else.
I agree. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate your call. Let's see. Dean wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He's writing and listening in Royal Oak. He says, oh, yeah, crisis in October. Peter, what do you think might happen in October? Now, what he's referring to, many of you know what this means, called the October surprise. And this is what is, what would you, I'm trying to look for the verb I want here. This is you know, a phony crisis that occurs right before the election. Bush is in big trouble now. And so the economy is not going to significantly increase. I mean, the economy will. I mean, the economy is doing all right. It's over 10,000 in the stock exchange and what have you. But there's still the job loss. There's all the problems with the economy as it has an impact on the average person is not being alleviated. So plus, you know, that the respect, the trust is really being eroded over this weapons of mass destruction things. In fact, that Bush scammed out of you know, having to go to Vietnam because he was a rich kid and all that. So what they're going to have to do is create something. I mean, this is the logic of it all. Create something by October. But I don't know what they can do, Dean, because if all of a sudden at the last moment, they find Osama bin forgotten. Some people, there's some newspapers in Europe that say he's already you know, captured. That the Saddam capture didn't do much for Bush. It went up about 4 points and right down again. Another terror attack? How would that work? Would that increase Bush's stature, or would it actually diminish it? Because people feel, well, he was strong about that. But if he's allowed, if he allows another one to occur, well, that might work negatively. Start another war? Who's he going to attack? Iran? North Korea? He's not going to attack North Korea because they really do have weapons of mass destruction. Remember I said that that if Iraq would have had weapons of mass destruction, the United States would not have invaded. Just like they didn't. Remember that whole kind of parallel? The North Korea is saying, we'll drown you in a lake of fire. I mean, that's what they're saying. They're threatening us with nuclear weapons. And Iraq is saying, we don't have any. All the inspectors are here. You know, they can come in and go where they want. And Bush is still putting forth this big lie that it's Iraq that is the real threat. In the meantime, North Korea is, well, let's talk with them and see how we can work things out with people in the region. So I don't know what they can do, Dean, for an October surprise, but be looking for it. I'm wondering what's going to happen at the Republican convention. The Republican convention is being held in New York City. This cynical choice to in this overwhelmingly Democratic city, much like Detroit is, and the surrounding area. This is done on the bones of the September 11th victims. They want the September 11th victims to be their props for their political convention. And there is going to be demonstrations there. There could easily be hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people there. Who knows what that's all going to spark? And will that, if there are, I mean, people that are planning it are planning legal, peaceful demonstrations. You can go to my website and check that out. But if there is violence, if there are police riots like there were in Miami, how will that make the Republicans look? Good? I mean, will people sympathize with them or will it have the opposite effect? I don't know. All right, let's go back to our phones. Peter Werby here with you, 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hey, this is Brendan. I like your show a lot. Haven't listened to it a lot, but what your views and what you have to say and stuff. But what I wanted to talk about is in Michigan, like unemployment rate, and it's so low compared to like the rest, or so high. I mean, compared to the rest of the country. So and like what? Why is that? Do you know why that is? Just in like Michigan.
Well, part of it is the heavy dependence in Michigan on industrial jobs, and those are the ones that are leaving. The country is virtually being deindustrialized, like this big Electrolux plant over in, where is it, Greenville, Michigan, is it? Something like that. Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of regional factors that are involved. I mean, I probably should be. I would be most honest to say I don't know for 100% sure why it is, but this would be one of the factors.
I got another thing I want to talk about Bush and his like relative views of how the economy is doing better and how my dad has still been out of job for more than 8 months now, and it's just like how can you say that you know it's going up and here, mostly, that we're being affected the most, you know?
Yeah, well, it's if you measure the strength of the economy by how much stockholders are reaping, I mean, for one thing, the recovery is fueled on a couple of things. First off is these massive state expenditures in the political state, I mean, the United States government, massive expenditures on war, preparation for war, the actual war itself, and then the reconstruction of Iraq. Now, Iraq doesn't get the money. Pardon me. All those, we are paying thousands and thousands of Iraqi workers directly, but the billions really are going to these friends of Bush's, these corporations, to rebuild what his other friends destroyed. The other thing is, with these low interest rates, people have refinanced their homes, and in many, many cases, I know I did that when I refinanced, took some extra cash. So it's fueled also on debt. So if I take like an extra $5,000, I'm going to say, all right, I'm going to finally do to my dilapidated kitchen what I've been wanting to do for years, like I did. I mean, that injects another $5,000, say, into the economy. But this is debt that I owe. So it's debt that has a risk to it. Foreclosures are at an all-time high. Housing foreclosures. I mean, people like me, you know, that say, oh, well, I'll just do all this, and then all of a sudden, boom, no job. Those couple of things are one of the things that's driving profits up. And the other thing is that as they lay off workers, you always see this, like IBM says, laying off like 6,000 workers. I mean, that's a lot of workers. And that's a lot of families. But the people remaining have to pick up that work so that there's this enormous increased productivity. And it used to be that workers would share in that, because as we've found more efficient ways for individual workers to produce more and hence create more wealth, that would be shared with the workforce. Now it's, you know, they're trying to break unions, drive down wages, threaten people that if they don't give concessions that they're going to move out of the state or out of the country, and then sometimes actually do that. So workers are working harder and they're not being rewarded. So that's more and more wealth that's provided for, you know, to the owners. So it's not a pretty picture.
Yeah. Just a final thing. Have you ever been to the www.bushin30seconds.com, I think it is?
Oh, I mean the moveon.org. Yeah, yeah. It's on my...
It's kind of like affiliation with that. But they had like a contest for commercials and stuff.
Right.
And there's just wanted to let everyone know that it's a good thing to get. It has a lot of good facts on there and a lot of good commercials, kind of anti-Bush commercials that have a lot of truth in them.
Yeah, well, you know, Brendan, the CBS refused to air the winning commercial.
Yeah, I know. That was... It's total bullshit. I'm sorry about that, but it's total crap, you know?
Yeah.
And I just think it's so wrong that it takes such a view when, you know, they have a bunch of viewers on their own station that are, you know, Democrat too. So.
Sure. Well, they're just, they're fearful because, you know, they have this little racket where the son of Colin Powell runs the FCC. Brendan, thank you very much. Appreciate your call.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. Let's see, here are some of these facts. $127 billion, that was the amount of the U.S. budget surplus in the year that Bush became president. $374 billion, that's the amount of the U.S. budget deficit 2 years later. First, this year's deficit is on course to be the biggest in United States history. $1.58 billion, average amount by which the U.S. debt increases each day. 23,920, amount of each U.S. citizen's share of the national debt as of January 19, 2004. Because when the country owes this money, because, you know, Bush has driven the country into debt, he too, or we too, I guess it should be, have become collective debtors. Debtors? Debtor, are we? Yeah, we're debtors, right. We owe. And people have loaned us, banks have loaned us money, and we have to repay that. We have to pay debt service, just, you know, on your credit card. Sometimes you're, or like when you're making a housing payment and it's $1,000 and 800 of it is interest or something like that right at the beginning. Well, it's not quite that bad. But foreign banks have loaned the United States money, and then our taxes go to all those places, like I mentioned, all of Bush's buddies. For, you know, destroying and reconstructing Iraq. And also, though, we have, since he's created this national debt, our tax money also goes to these foreign banks. Now, one of the things that Bush has done, I mean, he's been the worst environmental president possibly that there ever was. I mean, he wins most of this. And I don't know if I can find this one real quickly, but there's this additive in gasoline. I don't want to say it wrong. MBT something or other, something like that. Anyways, this is poisoning drinking water, and that they've backed off banning it because guess what? That's right. His buddies in that industry have contributed over $1 million to his reelection campaign. So it's thorough corruption. All right, let's go back to our phones. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening. Hey, you with me? Maybe not. I'm going to put you on hold just to check. Sometimes I'm doing something wrong. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
It's Roy.
Hey, Roy it is?
You bet. Down here in New Mexico.
Oh, Roy. Hi.
Hi. How you doing?
Doing well. Placito, yeah. New Mexico, right?
Placitas.
Placitas, yeah. Placito is probably something else.
The reason I was calling, number one, it's good when I find something to disagree with you on, because I agree with you.
Okay.
The infant mortality.
Yeah.
I do not, I think the increase in poverty has perhaps a little bit of a contributing factor to it, but I don't think it's near the major part, in my opinion, is the fact that the whole birthing process from the get-go has been so medicalized that it has become a profit center for the hospitals. It's one of the few things that really make a good buck on. If a poor person goes into the hospital, into the county hospital or the, you know, the quote charity hospital, they don't have any option for a midwife. They can't plan to have their birth at home in a nice, safe environment. The childhood education class consists of, shut up, the nurses will tell you what to do, take your drugs. Oh, and by the way, your doctor has got a golf game on Friday, so we have to schedule you for an emergency C-section on Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
The United States leads the world in the use of Pitocin to induce labor. It leads the world, or I'm sorry, Brazil is the only other country that beats the United States on the succession.
You're listening to
rate. And each time there's a, you know, I'm not saying that there's not an appropriate time at some point in time where medical intervention is needed, but it is such a minor cause that if women, A, were able to relax and take care of the birthing the way it was supposed to happen, the medical interventions would be so greatly reduced to less interventions that are, the vast majority of the time, totally unnecessary.
Wait. But so, Roy, you're saying that this is driving up the infant mortality rate?
Yeah.
Well, here's another thing that is suggested has driven up the infant mortality rate, and that is that through medical technology, babies that previously would have died in the natural birth process are being kept alive but don't survive the first year. I mean, that's one of the official explanations. I still think, though, that because every country that takes care of its citizens, like all, you know, with the all the industrial countries, with the exception of ours, and you know, are right up there at the top with the best infant mortality, the lowest infant mortality rate. In a country that has the highest percentage of poor people of any industrial country and has no guaranteed health system, it just stands to reason that as people get poorer, more people lose their jobs, what's going to happen? The infant mortality rate's going to go up.
Oh, I'm not saying that it's not a contributory factor, but the United States has been in that range of infant mortality for, well, ever since I got involved with paying attention to birth.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, this is not, it's always been, it's been disgraceful for the last
four. It is.
Yeah. And right now it's up at 7. Inner cities of large metropolitan areas, sometimes their infant mortality rate is like 16 per 1,000, which is, then you're starting to approach third world rates.
Right.
In the United States, yeah.
It's just a whole combination. And I use the term medicalization of birth. I was down with some midwives and doulas, and, you know, I don't know if you know, but my wife's a hypnobirthing teacher, and, you know, so I'm pretty involved with the whole birthing, complementary. And it just, the more I learn, the more irritated the matter I get, you know.
I don't blame you. Well, Roy, say hello to all my friends out there in the Santa Fe and area. And also, I'm actually been invited. I'm really remiss. I can't remember the station. I'll announce it next week.
KTRC.
What?
KTRC.
No. For another, for an FM station that wants to do an interview with me. I'll put that on my website.
Okay.
Thank you, Roy. All right. That's when I used to do my national show. When was it? Between October 2000 and June 2003, we broadcasted into Santa Fe, and I went out there a couple of times. This is showbiz, so I don't have to be modest. Do you know that actually the show was so popular out there, Rick Fox, I'm talking to my producer and phone screener now, that the mayor of Santa Fe declared it the day I was out there, Peter Werby Day in Santa Fe. And I still have this big official proclamation. Talk about, you rarely see me ever blush, and I didn't know this was coming at me. All right, let's continue on. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, how you doing, Peter?
Doing well.
My name is Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Basically, I have a couple of facts to give out, too, here on the infant mortality rate.
Sure.
You're saying Japan was number one. I'll make sure I understood what you were saying. Is that you're saying Japan has the least amount of infant mortalities, correct?
That's right. The lowest rate. In other words, they have the most live births per thousand. Right.
Okay. If you research it further back, you'll discover that around the late 80s, early 90s, Japan was right with us as far as infant mortality rate. We were way down. We had the highest, pretty much, and so did Japan. I think we were actually tied.
Really?
And they did a major research. There was an ongoing 15-year study up to this point as to what was causing all these deaths. They related it to vaccines.
Huh.
And what they did in the early 90s, they passed legislation in Japan to outlaw any vaccines given to a children less than 24 months old. And within 3 years of doing that, they jumped to number one of having the least infant mortalities, and they've been there ever since.
Well, you know, I mean, is there infant vaccination or?
Oh yeah, they infant. Most time they want to give children vaccines the day they're born, the DPT shot and pertussis and a few other things. It's just amazing. I mean, personally, my wife and I, we chose not to vaccinate our children. We chose through education, not through people telling us what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe in freedom of choice. And Michigan is one of only five states in the U.S. that still gives you freedom of choice of deciding whether or not to vaccinate your children. Most people think already in Michigan it's against the law to not vaccinate your children. It's not against the law, but private schools have the right to refuse you if you don't vaccinate. But all the public schools, there is a waiver form, and there's three or four different options. You can choose medical, which means if your child has had an adverse reaction to a previous vaccine, you no longer have to vaccinate your child based on that.
Just, you know, I've heard, in fact, even had guests over the years on people that question the medical necessity of universal vaccination.
Mm-hmm.
And it came home to me in an odd manner. My wife and I don't have any children, but we have a dog we love very much, and she got extraordinarily ill. And, I mean, at first they thought she had leukemia. She almost died.
Mm-hmm.
And the vet said that he used to see like maybe one or two cases like this a year, and he was seeing three and four. And what he's been doing now is checking her blood to see whether or not she actually needs a vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, these vaccines haven't been necessary, that her blood still has the antibodies necessary to, without having a regular scheduled vaccination.
Right. And then also, too, are you saying that there's been a rapid increase, or at least over the past couple of years here? They recently changed it to where if you are in any type of state or government-aided program, as far as WIC or welfare, you are required by the law to vaccinate your children to maintain on that benefit.
Well, it's a tough question, and I've always been interested because, for one thing, the problem with the American medical system is, as Roy from New Mexico was just telling us before, the fact that it's profit-driven, always, you're always questioning, I mean, are people doing what's medically necessary? Are we getting the drugs that we actually need? Or are we involved in a system that, I know the latter is true. Are we involved in a system where the more that's expended, the better it is for the people that wind up with the big profits?
Right.
Yeah.
One last thing I want to point out is that recently, like in the past 4 or 5 years, I can't remember the exact years because I research so much stuff and I get my facts a little mixed up once in a while, but I'm sure you've probably recalled the big thing about the anti-diarrhea vaccine that came out a few years back. Basically, they did a sample across the U.S. of 2,000 children, and I believe within the first 2 months of them getting the vaccine, I forget the exact percentage, but somewhere between 40 and 60% of those children had to have surgery for emergency bowel obstruction.
And, wow.
Quite a few of them died, and as soon as that started happening, I think as soon as it reached 500 children who had to have the surgery, they pulled the vaccine from the shelves and immediately recalled everything.
That's good.
Just goes to show you how blindly we trust the medical field when it comes to injecting stuff in our children.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the time.
Thank you for joining us.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
Okay, so my friend Larry, Big Dummy, sees cool new bike I buy at Motown Harley Davidson, says it's a total chick magnet. Larry's not very smooth. He'd have better chance with babes if he buys a bike like me. All our friends tell Larry, buy a bike at Motown! Buy a bike at Motown! So Larry, who listens like a stone, decides to shop competition. The other dealers all scream in his face, MSRP! MSRP! And Larry says, WTF. Then they tell him the price with an interest rate so large I thought they were quoting it in like pesos or rubles or Japanese yen or something. And his head explodes. Then I take friend Larry to Motown Harley Davidson in Taylor. They tell Larry, compare a low monthly payment for low pay. And he says, no way. And they say, low pay. And he says, no way. And they say, low pay. And Larry says, okay. And now we are raiding our Harleys, and Larry has to fight up all the chicks with a stick.
Really, Larry? No.
And they think he's actually more macho. And his bald spot is shrinking. And he lost that spare tire around his tummy since he bought his bike at Motown. I hate Larry. The end!
For sales, specials, events, or just to look at cool pictures, log on to MotownHarley.com. Motown Harley Davidson in Taylor on Telegraph, just north of Eureka.
Remember, guys, chicks stick a guy on the real motorcycle. Buy a bike at Motown! Okay.
Hey, Napoleon, where are you going?
I'm going to Waterloo to meet my enemies.
But you could get defeated if you go there.
Who cares? It's over for me anyway. My wife, Josephine, she's divorcing me. She has this tough lawyer who wants to take everything. My palace at Versailles, all the fancy medals I win.
Oh?
Even my faithful horse, Pierre.
Well, there's no reason for a man to lose his home, his children, his money, or his self-respect.
Oh?
Now, Adam is here to protect you. Adam is the American Divorce Association for Men. They're a group of highly qualified divorce attorneys and counselors who will defend the rights of men in any divorce case.
Ooh.
Adam will answer your questions about divorce at no charge. Call the American Divorce Association for Men.
Hello, this is Napoleon the Great speaking.
Who is that, you nappy daddy?
Josephine, what do you want from me now?
Adam is handling your divorce.
Yes, so?
Well, maybe after you conquer the rest of Europe, we could have lunch. I mean, it's nothing to lose your head over.
Call Adam at 248-356-ADAM. That's 248-356-ADAM.
Hi, everybody. I'm Doug Podell from 101 The Riff. You hear me on the air, but what a lot of you don't know is that I'm also behind the scenes as the program director. And I'll tell you, being on the air is great, but there's a lot of people in radio and TV working behind the scenes to make what you hear and see a reality. If you love listening to the radio like WRAF or watching television, you may be surprised to know that there's likely a career in it for you. Now, the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts in Southfield, Michigan is inviting you to a free job shadow seminar Wednesday, March 3rd, starting at 5 p.m. You can join me, Doug Podell, along with others from Metro Detroit radio, television, and production industries for a glimpse at the career experiences that are waiting for you. If your job isn't the best job in the world, well, maybe it's time for you to find one that is. That's the Specs Howard School of Broadcast Arts. It's on 9 Mile in Evergreen in Southfield. March 3rd, come on out, starting at 5 p.m. You can register today by calling 248-358-9000 or just log on to WRIF.com for more information, and we'll see you there.
Trudy Daniels here with David Hall, the mortgage expert. Do I have to call you that?
No.
Well, whatever. David, haven't heard much about refinancing these days. Are you shushing me? What are you up to?
It's the silent refinance boom of 2004. Nobody knows about it. Interest rates are actually lower right now than they were this time last year.
Get out of here. That can't be true.
It's the real story. A recent study by Fannie Mae, you know them, they're big. 41% of all homeowners can benefit from refinancing today, and everybody thought it was over.
Wow, I did. So even if you refinanced in 2002 or 2003, you should take another look? Is that it?
Trudy, as little as a 0.5% drop in your interest rate could save you thousands of dollars.
Wow. Well, a refinance boom for 2004 then is on.
That's right, and a mortgage expert can tell you whether or not refinancing makes sense for you, but don't wait. We don't know how long it'll last.
So call the mortgage experts at Rock Financial today, 800-333-ROCK, or go online anytime, 24 hours a day at rockfinancial.com.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you're on hold trying to get on the show, please stand by. If the lines are busy, please try again.
All right, thank you very much. Hey, at 1 a.m. Eastern Time, and it's about 22 minutes away, we'll be doing a couple of interviews. We, that sounds like the royal we, me, I, will be doing it. And our first guest, Harvey Wasserman, expert on energy, where this is all going. Let's see here. Dale Earnhardt Jr. won the Daytona 500, but I was looking for the thing where it was attended by Bush, and he... let me see. The race was attended by Bush, launched the Nextel Cup era, and but I'm trying to see where. Anyways, there's not much. Bush, I think, started all. But here, we're sorry, I don't mean to be fumbling and bumbling around about this. But Stephen from Dearborn Heights wrote in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. And he says, it's the subject, another dangerous Bush stunt at Daytona 500. And he says, Pete, did you hear that Bush pulled another stunt today at the Daytona 500? Prior to the start of the race, Air Force One flew very low over the speedway before landing. It seemed to be a risky stunt, and perhaps will come up that Bush was already on the ground and not even on the plane. He then went on to start the race by telling drivers to start their engines, another publicity stunt that we, the taxpayers, will flip the bill for. Well, you're right. You know, I'll tell you, though, Stephen, they've got some little formula that if it's a solely private political event, then the campaign is supposed to pay for it. But they always manage to slip in some a little official deal. So, yeah, you're right. We probably are picking up the bill for this. But I didn't hear anything about this. Rick Fox, did you hear anything about their, I mean, did the Air Force One buzz the field? Yeah, man. Maybe someone, some of you know that. Let's see. Line 6 is where we're going. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, how are you?
Hi.
All right. My name is Laura. I'm calling from Ferndale.
Hi, Laura.
And me and my husband just had a successful home birth in December. I'm a first-time mom, and I had a 9-pound, 2-ounce baby with no medical intervention.
Really? Wonderful.
Yep. And I just wanted to say that, you know, I did a lot of research before I made my decision. And not only does the United States have one of the highest infant mortality rates for an industrialized nation, but we also have one of the highest maternal mortality rates. And that can be attributed to things like, you know, lousy prenatal care for low-income women and induced labors. But we also have one of the highest cesarean rate sections. I heard one of the callers mention that the cesarean rate in the U.S. is 26.1%. And there are actually some hospitals in the Detroit area where a cesarean rate is above 50%.
Man.
Yeah,
so you can schedule it. Well, I'm going to have the baby on Saturday at 6.
Actually, weekend births are down, and the most popular day to have your baby is a Tuesday, the most productive day of the work week.
That's amazing. Hey, tell me a little, again, about the maternal death rate. And any idea where the standings are? We were saying the United States is 42nd. I mean, we're supposed to be the greatest country in the world, so we should be number one in things like that. These are what they call indexes of, what do they call it, social... All of a sudden, the phrase is out of my mind. In other words, a quality of life. That's what I was looking for.
Right.
These are quality of life indexes. So if the United States was number one, like these meatheads chant, then we'd be number one in low infant mortality rate. We'd be number one in low maternal, what was the phrase? Maternal, what is it?
Sub-maternal mortality rate.
Mortality rate, right. Right. So this is disgraceful. And these are, you know, eventually, during the 30s and 40s, there was this mafia hit squad called Murder Incorporated. It was guys that killed for profit. And when you have the possibility of not having this, of having the cash available to make this country number one, instead allows it to be number 42, this is Murder Incorporated. These people died unnecessarily.
Right. I mean, a lot of the, the cesareans is because, doctors are in and, you know, they're going to have a shift change or they're going to go on vacation and they want to schedule something. And women, a lot of times, go into the hospital and their labors either slow down or completely stop because they're so scared of what's going on and they're so uncomfortable that they have to induce the labor. And then they induce the labor, you know, which is more painful. They have these awful contractions, and they pressure the women to get an epidural. They numb the lower half of your body, so you can't even feel what's going on, so you can't push. Then they have to do a cesarean.
Right.
So it's all, you're kind of set up to fail.
Or forceps,
yeah.
Yeah.
All of which, I think having a normal vaginal birth is the second riskiest thing you can do in a hospital.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think, I don't know exactly where we are on the index, but the maternal mortality rate, I'm fairly certain, just went up from 6% to 7%.
Mm-hmm. Laura, you said you had a natural childbirth without any medical intervention. Did you have, like, a midwife?
Yeah, I had two midwives there and my husband, and it was wonderful. I mean, it was not what I'd like to call, like, a medicalized or assembly line birth in a hospital. It was really spiritual. It was really peaceful. you know, I didn't have to, my baby was never taken away from me. You know, she was born, we had a bath, we got cleaned up, we hopped in the bed and fell asleep.
You know, wonderful.
It was great. You know, she never had any shots. She never had her blood taken. You know, now they, by law in Michigan in a hospital, when you have a baby, you have to have a newborn screening test.
Do you?
Which is pretty sketchy. They test your baby. They do, like, a blood test for these genetic tests.
Mm-hmm.
You have diseases, and then they keep your baby's blood on file for a while. I'm not sure how long it is.
What about, you have to have, like, silver nitrate in the baby's eye?
Yeah, they put silver nitrate in their eyes. They give them a vitamin K shot. They give them a hepatitis B shot. And this is within the first couple hours that they're alive. You know,
yikes.
Not alive, but born. So I opted out of all that stuff. But it's a different story when, you know, you have your first pediatrician visit. I mean, we got, you know, our pediatrician thought we were totally, you know, these fanatics. Because we went in and we said, no, we didn't have the newborn screening, you know, we didn't have the vaccination. And they questioned your ability as a parent. They think you're awful when you...
Still hadn't... I mean, don't pediatricians, haven't they got a clue over the last 30 years?
I don't think so. I've got a good one now, but our first visit was just terrible. You know, she threatened me. She told me that if I didn't have the screening done, my child's going to have ambiguous genitalia. And if I didn't give her these vitamins, she was going to have rickets and... They really put a lot of pressure on the mother to make these decisions, and it's a lot of guilt involved. You feel like if you make the wrong decision that you're going to be responsible for, you know, your child coming down with this terrible disease, but, you know, most of which have been eradicated, you know, and it's not really due to the vaccinations. It's more due to the fact that we have, you know, good sanitation in the country.
Sure.
Or at least if you know, in higher income areas, I guess.
Well, Laura, it's wonderful it all worked out so well, and you sound like a happy mother.
Yeah, it's great. I would definitely recommend home birth.
All right, great. Thanks for joining us.
All right, thank you very much.
I appreciate it. That was a wonderful call. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air.
Hi, is this Peter?
Yeah, it's Peter, and you're on the air. Who's this?
This is Will, and I'm down here in Newport.
Welcome.
And I'd just like to talk to you about an article I read down here, and it's in the... Monroe Evening News that was printed there last week on February 10th.
Okay.
And the article, you know, talks about the Howard Dean, I Have a Scream speech that was played over and over again on the major networks.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, during the article, it talks about how the networks overplayed the, you know, that speech over and over again. They played it like 633 times, it says in the article.
Really? They played it that much?
Oh, yeah, I couldn't believe it when I read that article. And, kind of reminds me of an old history lesson I, you know, learned in history about the yellow press back in the turn of the century. And I was kind of wondering if you ever made that correlation, you know, with the other networks that seem to, you know, overplay things. You know, they did that with Bill Clinton during the, his impeachment. And,
sure. Well, they use it two ways. I mean, they use it to attack people like Clinton and Howard Dean. I mean, I heard that, and he just seemed like he was making this extraordinarily exuberant speech to compensate for the fact that he had lost and that he was saying, we're not going to be, we're not going to be deterred. We're going to go to here, and we're going to go to Michigan, or, you know, like what have you. And it just didn't seem like he had lost it. I mean, so what all the – see, many ways these conservative talk show hosts drive all this. So they say, oh, he's lost it. It shows how, you can't trust his temperament. And then they have these speeches over and over again saying, and we're going to, you know, do this, and we're going to go to Michigan. And, I mean, didn't – sound odd to me, but when they play it over and over again and they frame it in these terms that are that work, you know, for what they want to portray about the man, they want to weaken a candidate. It does that. I don't know if you heard it a couple hours ago at the beginning of the show there must have been, I don't know, people heard it, 50, 75 recorded quotes that we played, maybe more, of all the, you know, the Bush operatives saying that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. So this repetition through the corporate media and the conservative media really works for their agenda.
Right, you know, that's exactly. And, I just couldn't believe that the networks actually admitted to it after the damage was actually done. And
yeah.
One of the CNN... top executives, I think his name is Purcell Hare, I think his name is in the article. And, admits that it was being overplayed. And, you know, what I can't believe is that, you know, that they don't actually admit to actually taking the speech out of context as well, because, I mean, they just showed that little short little clip, and it really irritated so many people.
I don't get it. Well, thank you, Will. Thanks for bringing that up.
All right. Well, thanks, Peter.
All right. Thanks for having joined us from Newport. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Peter, how are you tonight?
Doing great.
Excellent, excellent. I just had a quick one for you, all right? What do you think about the war on consensual crimes?
Oh, I think it's awful.
All right. Why does no one hold the Democratic Party or Republican Party or any party for that matter that's in the limelight for not, you know, for failing to address the probably the biggest issue as far as I'm concerned that's, you know, causing trouble in our nation? You got to figure all of the crime, every drive-by shooting, every overdose, every 90% of the crime out there that people complain about is can be rooted to just the, you know, criminalization of, you know, consensual crimes.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
sure.
None of the parties will come out and say it. The only party right now that seems to have any stance whatsoever on it is the Libertarian Party, and it seems like nobody seems to know who the hell these people are.
Well, it obviously doesn't seem to be what drives, you know, you say it's the most important. It doesn't seem to be the driving concern of other people. But on the other hand, the two political parties have had a traditionally had a lock on the system.
Exactly.
Although, who knows? I mean, now all the money almost is going to, you know, to Bush because, you know, they don't even make any bones about it. Bush just gives away the whole store to the corporations.
I wouldn't go that far, man. I say the Democrats are just as accountable for special interests. I mean, have you seen Kerry's record?
Yeah, I was going to say, well, that's what I meant. Historically, it's been the other side of the racket, but the big money has been now way disproportionately going to the Republicans.
Well, I mean, how can you say that when Kerry's got more special interest money than any other candidate right now, Bush included?
Oh.
I say he's just as dirty as everyone else.
Well, I'm not going to spend any time defending Kerry, but I mean the idea that the amount of money that Bush has already raised from it's not special interest. I mean that's kind of an odd phrase. In fact, it's a Republican phrase. I mean what? I mean I'm not saying that it's not. It can't possibly be accurate, but I mean Bush has the you can see the direct relationship between the Bush, you know, contributions, and you could see it sometimes in Clinton and Gore. I'm not trying to say that's not the case, and I'm sure it's among Kerry and other senators as well. But now, when you know, as a reward for this bill that that does so much for the pharmaceutical companies, they respond by giving millions, and you can just go down the line in banking and telecommunications and what have you.
It's just funny though because you get. You know, everyone says they know what the answer is to the problems. You know, the Democrats are, let's go ahead and we're going to go ahead and make this illegal and we're going to say, all right, guns are bad, they're causing the crime, and this is causing crime. Republicans are like, no, it's lack of morality that's causing crime, blah, blah, blah. And neither party seems to have a single grasp on the actual origin. Nobody's went and said, okay, here is the intent behind the majority of the crimes out there. Here is the, you know, circumstances. And if they actually did a study on that, if they looked and said, you know, what was the motive for every crime committed, and they tallied it up, they find out that somebody had something to do with drug distribution or gambling or whatever, all these things that are illegal right now that could be taxed and regulated, and it's just absolutely disgusting.
Well, we're on the same page on that, pretty much so. Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good night.
Bye now. Yeah. Somebody said a long time ago, legalize it. It's one of those things, it gets to all those issues, like gay marriages and drugs and all that stuff. I mean, either there's laws that already control negative behavior. In other words, you can't, just like you can't be high on alcohol, you can't be high on drugs and drive. You want a drug and alcohol free workplace. I mean, those things are already in place. But just as our last caller said, these state-sponsored repression of our vices is just a monstrous racket that drains the public coffers and makes criminals of you know of us, the American people. We got okay. I think we can get another call in here at least. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter.
Hi.
I'm ABB. Anybody by Bush?
Oh, okay.
All right. And then I was going to try to pop in a couple things. is the foreign aid that we give out is just tremendous, and maybe we could save some money on that, like maybe cut back at 10% per year. You know,
how about it? Wait, you're being a little too moderate here. How about if we just cut it all off? Why are we giving billions of dollars to Israel and Egypt and you know, all these other little lousy dictatorships and you know, in Asia and all that?
Yeah, it's disgusting. Maybe we could save money that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was another issue I was going to say about the TID on the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's totally ridiculous. It's totally flamed up. But you said earlier, like, maybe there'd be some parents offended by their kids seeing this, and then it's sensationalized. You know, it seems like everything's sensationalized
Yeah. And
totally overdone, and it's totally in your face. But, I mean, but what about this this acceptance of, you know, 10% of population or living things are supposedly homosexual or gay or something,
mm-hmm.
Then, I mean, that's out of the ordinary and, you know, fine. You know, and I don't have a problem with them people if they just keep it in the closet, you know, but so to speak.
Well, so to speak. I mean, why should anybody keep who they are in the closet? Yeah, I gotta go home. So thanks a lot. Yeah, I thought it was out of the closet, onto television, I guess, where all those shows. Screaming Scott called in and says, "What is it? Who and Grace? Will and Grace? Yeah, Will and Grace. Either the or one of the most popular television programs. And then they got all that." What is it? Gay Eye for the Straight Guy, or no? It's not, what? Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. Right. Thank you, Ray. I never even seen any of those shows. But so gay is in, and that worries a lot of people. But you're safe. And I'll tell you what: if you're really worried, you can order orifice protectors so that when you go to sleep, you'll be safe from, you know, rampaging homosexuals. They even have special ones that where you can stop up your nose and your ears, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. You think I'm joking, huh? All right. Don't worry, folks. You're safe from the homosexual menace. At least that's what my gay friends told me. All right. Thanks a lot for joining me. Stay tuned. Got a couple of real interesting interviews for you. One including that we've played before. That'll be on about 1:30 with Tom Tomorrow, the cartoonist, guy that does This Modern Life in the Metro Times.
If someone said you can make annoying stretch marks and discolored scars disappear, wouldn't you jump at the chance? Now you can with a painless, effective, drug-free procedure from Dr. Roche. Dr. Roche introduces a new laser procedure called Reloom. Reloom is a revolutionary treatment that uses laser technology to camouflage those white stretch marks, dark pigmented scars, or any area on your body that is distorted by pigment loss. With Reloom, restoration of lost pigment is routinely achieved within weeks. Don't let embarrassing stretch marks be a constant reminder of your heavyweight days. Dr. Roche also offers clear light laser technology to eliminate acne. The clear light system uses high intensity narrow band light to destroy bacteria that causes acne. You'll be able to stop spending your money on acne treatment products and prescription drugs forever. Visit drroche.com. That's DRROCHE.com or AOL keyword Dr. Roche. Then call for a consultation. 877-338-1110. That's 877-338-1110.
Hey, Dave. What's going on?
Not much with me, but it looks like lots going on at Mr. Jones. This place looks awesome, man.
Yeah? I thought you knew. That guy Michael Abrams, who owns Snooker's Pool and Pub, just bought Mr. Joe's.
Oh, Mr. Joe's was okay before, but now it's great. It has new plasma TVs and big screens everywhere. Before you know it, this old sports bar will look brand new.
Cool. We'll never miss a game, and we still get great food. There's nothing like a Mr. Joe's burger.
Oh, new TVs, new menu. Mr. Joe's sure is a sweet place to hang out with friends. Oh, hello. I think maybe we'll be making some new friends here, too.
Oh, Oh, yeah. I think we'll be spending some time at Mr. Joe's.
New plasma screen TVs. Big screens for big games. Great new menu, including the famous Mr. Joe's burger. You can get it all at the newest member of the Snookers family, Mr. Joe's on 12 Mile in Southfield, between Telegraph and Northwestern Highway, open till 2 a.m. Visit Snookers Pool and Pubs at any location, Livonia, Royal Oak, Utica, East Point, and Southgate. And don't forget about McVee's in Southfield. Snookers Pool and Pub, McVee's, and Mr. Joe's. Great places for a good time. Guaranteed.
Calling Oil Razors. The American badass brings it to Detroit. Are you ready?
Let the rock rock this place.
Live. Kid Rock. He's Whiskey Fest. And he's hellbound. He will blow your mind. March 27th at Cobo Arena. Kid Rock. One night only. Tickets only $37.50. On sale now. Get tickets at cc.com. Joe Louis and the Fox Theater box offices are charged by phone at 248-645-6666. Be sure and pick up Kid Rock's new self-titled CD. If it's gonna be big, and it's gonna be bad, then it's got to be Kid Rock in Detroit.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708. Prolong the pleasure, maximize the control, and see how much longer you last with Maxtral. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708.
AirTran Airways in Flint asks you,
with or without
the kids,
nonstop flights to Fort Lauderdale for you and Orlando for the kids, or the kid in you.
So, after you take the kids to see Mickey and the gang on AirTran Airways flight to Orlando, spend your day sunning yourself on 23 miles of beach, having quiet nights on the waterfront, shopping, choosing from over 3,500 restaurants, sightseeing, or golfing their 56 courses.
Immerse yourself in Fort Lauderdale.
Spend time with friends, family, or enjoy solitude at sunset. AirTran Airways. Go. There's nothing stopping you. With nonstops from Flint to Atlanta, Orlando, and Fort Lauderdale, to make your low-fare reservation to any of AirTran Airways 45 destinations, including Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Denver. Go to AirTran.com. Call your local travel agent or 1-800-AIRTRAN. Flint's Bishop International Airport, where I-75 and I-69 meet. You can get there from here.
Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby, on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Hey, thank you very much for joining me. I, on the way here to the radio station, I filled up my tank. Oh, man, what's going on here? Over $1.70 a gallon in many places. I think I got it. I got a bargain. I got it for $1.62 or something like that. Natural gas prices going up. A few people in this region, many people in the Northeast, to heating their homes with fuel oil. In some cases, more than doubled, particularly. That has real impact out in rural areas. And then Chevron, Mobil, ExxonMobil, record profits. And we're still addicted to oil. Let's bring back to the Peter Werby Show someone who has a realistic view of what's happening with our energy needs. He's Harvey Wasserman, and he has a very important article at MotherJones.com. Free and Green, it's called, A Free Market Embracing Green Power Supporting Alternative to the Bush Energy Plan. And Harvey Wasserman is the author of many books, including his new one with Bob Fritakis, called George W. Bush Versus the Superpower of Peace. Harvey Wasserman, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Great to be with you, Peter. Always a pleasure.
I don't have that new book. Get it to me. We'll do an interview on that.
All right. Anyway, sure will.
Okay. So what's happening? I mean, we just everybody says we fought a war for oil and...
Well, you know, it's quite counterintuitive, actually. I figured at least that the Bushies would get oil prices down and gas prices down. That's been the prime indicator of an economy that's on the mend is lower gas prices, and yet there's here we conquered the country with the second largest oil reserves in the world, and the prices are going up. And maybe Halliburton's taking a bigger cut. I don't know.
Well, somebody's doing all right. As I said, ExxonMobil and Chevron record, and that's something for them. Record profits.
Yep.
They're doing well. So we can tell where the money's going. It's going right out of our pockets into theirs.
Yeah. And into the military budget, and anybody who's made a contribution to the Bush campaign coffer will, I'm sure, is getting quite a return on their investment.
Now, I like this, I like very much this little phrase you put together, the Coal, Oil, Nuke, Gas Plan, Kong, like in King
right.
Kong, C-O-N-G.
Right.
The Bush Energy Plan, which is pretty much in disarray, or at least just more of the same, which would be disarray, is more of the same.
Yeah, well, they're coming back with it, actually. The Bush Energy Strategy was started with... Dick Cheney meeting in secret with the boys from Enron and whoever else. And we're dying to find out now. I mean, he's really clung. This is years already that he's refused to allow any records of those meetings that he held with his energy cohorts to come up with the energy plan. He's really stonewalled that. Something must have been going on in those meetings. I think they may have had Janet Jackson in there or something like that. and then, of course, an actual bill was crafted in the Congress by Pete Domenici in the Senate, the senator from nuclear power, and Billy Towson, the congressman from oil and gas in the House. And they again wrote up their bill in secret, only released it like on a Friday and forced a vote on it the following Monday. But thankfully, the following week, but thankfully there were some provisions in the energy bill last year that were too much even for the Senate New England Republicans to stomach. And the primary problem was a provision for MTBE, which is a gasoline additive, which has been basically abandoned because of its massive environmental impact. And there was a provision in that energy bill to exonerate the MTBE producers from the responsibility of cleaning up their environmental mess, which has been estimated in the range of $30 billion. And that was too much for the six Republicans, senators from New England and John McCain of Arizona, and they voted against the bill, and as a result of that, it went down. So now the energy people, the Bush energy people, are bringing back a new bill. The TBE may be out of it, we don't know, but it does have huge subsidies for King Kong, coal, oil, nukes, and gas, and, you know, a pittance here and there for renewables. But it's a horrible, horrible bill, and we're going to have to try and stop it again. So primary argument of my article at www.motherjones.com is that they ought to get rid of all subsidies whatsoever. And, I'm not a free market guy.
I was going to say, that sounds pretty free market.
Well, but when it comes to fuels now, we're in a position where wind and solar and increased efficiency have come on so strong that they actually could win in a free market fight with coal, oil, nukes, and gas. And it's ironic. I got a response from the Cato Institute and saying, oh, no, 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 no. And it's funny because the so-called free market guys always advocate a free market and then come up with these bills that have massive subsidies for their sponsors. It somehow doesn't compute.
Well, Harvey Weissman, by the way, I just got an email from a constituent of Representative Billy Towson. You referred to him as what?
The representative from gas and oil.
Well, they said that he is now the representative from the pharmaceuticals.
That's right.
He's moved on.
The drug trade.
He's moved. He gets $2 million a year.
As we know, in the last 30 years, that the only really growth industry in this country is drugs.
Tell us, though, about subsidies for, one would think on the face of it, coal, oil, nuke, gas. I mean, why would corporations that are bringing in such profits for their stockholders, how could they have subsidies, and why would they? And I think the real question is, why are we, the taxpayers, funding them?
Well, it's because of who we got in the White House and the way the system works. I mean, the richer these guys are, the more subsidies they get. That's how the economy works these days, and that's why the U.S. is going down the toilet economically. I mean, the coal and oil and gas industries, the fossil fuel industries, get enormous subsidies for drilling and write-offs and tax breaks and, you know, whatever they can get away with, they get away with. And it's all in the fine print. There used to be all sorts of depletion allowances, but the biggest subsidy they really get is the destruction that they do to the natural environment. They are not taxed, as they should be, for destroying our air, destroying our water, poisoning our food, all that stuff. And so they basically get a free environmental ride, and then the government, the Bush people give them subsidies in the forms of tax breaks and other stuff on the ground, as it were.
Well,
the nuclear industry... Go ahead, Peter.
Well, I was just going to say, I just wish you'd make it a little more specific. Let's take something that everyone knows is profitable, and that's the oil industry. And we mentioned earlier about ExxonMobil and Chevron making record profits for this last quarter. And it might have some listeners scratching their head. What do you mean subsidies, depletion allowance? How directly does a profitable industry get subsidies from us, the taxpayers, when we can't even keep schools in Livonia open, and we can't we have to raise our university tuition here in Michigan, as I'm sure is happening where you live in Columbus, Ohio.
Right. Well, there is basically an army of shall we say, eye-rolling, eye-glazing, fine print that gives these the fossil fuel industry write-offs for all sorts of exploration, of storage, of transportation, and it comes in forms, sometimes in subsidies, usually in tax breaks, just for being in the fossil fuel industry. I mean, it's, you know, we have a massive storage facility underground in the south. I think it's in Louisiana. There are, you know, a whole host of other federal handouts that go to the fossil fuel industry, which are generally estimated in the range of, in this bill, of $20 to $30 billion.
This is the bill that failed, fortunately.
That's
and this
correct.
Is the bill that
coming back.
That Ken Lay and the Enron boys wrote in secret with Dick Cheney. Now,
that's
Dick
right.
Cheney is his desire to, what they call, invoke executive privilege and not tell the American people who was present at that meeting. That's being challenged by an environmental group and also by a right-wing conservative.
Right.
It's called Conservative Judicial Watch Group that says that's not the way business in America should be run. And so it's going to come before the Supreme Court to get a fair and just hearing, right?
Well, yes, and I believe that Dick Cheney and Justice Scalia took great pains to not discuss this case when they were duck hunting together at government expense. I certainly trust the both of them to really give us a fair and impartial verdict on that case.
By the way, they, as you probably know, Harvey Wasserman, they were at a retreat or something. I forget what the word is. It for owned by an oil company executive.
Yeah, who probably wrote the bill.
Yeah. Now, anything of you mentioned John McCain earlier in voting against this bill. Cheney is becoming so dirty, so to speak. There's a lot of speculation that he might not wind up to be the 2004 Republican party candidate. That
yeah, I think he may suddenly find himself in a cardiac unit.
Yeah, and John McCain, who even before the Commission on Weapons of Mass Destruction Intelligence has begun, he's already declared that he knows that that George Bush would not have purposely misrepresented the information.
What's the information?
About weapons, yeah.
Oh, okay. Let's see. We have weapons of mass destruction. What else do we have that we're talking about here? We're talking about the energy bill. I mean, what have these guys told the truth about today? They claim today now that they've found Bush's payroll records and all that from the National Guard.
Oh, even though there were 6 month gaps in it, they admit that there are 6 month gaps.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah. Well, he didn't need the money,
right?
But I think they did put in some of his bar bills. From some of the bars in Alabama and Mississippi that he was frequenting while he was supposed to be flying the plane. So we don't talk about
No. What we're talking about is Free and Green with Harvey Wasserman, who has this at MotherJones.com, the article, a very, very good website to go to. And we're talking about the state of energy today. We're about remaining on fossil fuel. And Harvey's contention is that that alternative fuels, wind power particularly, is highly profitable. And let's go to that a little.
Well, here's an irony for you, Peter. The for years and years now, it's been believed that the lake regions, even though there's been some wind in the Great Lakes area, that it was not strong or steady enough to support commercial wind power.
Mm-hmm.
And this, of course, is of great relevance to people in Michigan. As you know, there's been one commercial windmill out in Traverse City for quite some time.
Yeah, big
but
one.
In September, this past September, the city of Bowling Green installed two very large, very expensive commercial-scale windmills. These are 250 feet high to the peak of the tower. The blades are, I believe, 150 feet. I mean, they're big, 100 and a quarter, actually. And they are now... They opened up in September, and they're actually ahead of projections. And so what the reality now is that because this was not possible a couple of years ago, but because the wind turbines have gotten so big and so efficient, that we now can get significant wind power in and along the Great Lakes, and it's a major breakthrough really that could have tremendous significance because the major chunk of wind power in the United States is between the Mississippi and the Rockies. I mean, we have essentially the Saudi Arabia of wind out there. We could generate three times as much electricity as the country uses with currently available wind machines placed in the Great Plains. Unfortunately, there's no transmission, so you'd be generating all that electricity, and it can't get to market. It can't get to the big cities. But with these breakthroughs now in bigger and more efficient wind turbines. We could ring the Great Lakes and put these machines in the Great Lakes, and the transmission is there.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the machines that would be in Northwest Ohio could use the transmission lines from the Davis-Besse nuclear plant, which is thankfully shut. And if we ever got Fermi and the other nuclear plants in Michigan shut, those transmission lines could also be used for the new windmills.
Well, you know, you mentioned the ones in your article, Free and Green, owned by the city of Bowling Green, just south of us in Ohio. And you said expensive, $1.8 million. I mean, I don't even know if that qualifies as expensive anymore. I was looking at the New York Times on Sunday, and they have these nice little apartments in New York City for double that. You know, they're only 2,500 square feet. But tell me about, for instance, if you know, about the one in Traverse City, because I've seen it when I've been up there. And how much does that...
Well, it's much smaller. I can't give you the exact numbers. It's nowhere near as big. The ones in Bowling Green each supply electricity for about 1,000 homes. The one in Traverse City, I believe, is way smaller, but it's community-owned, and it does produce electricity now, which is increasingly competitive because, as we know, the electric rates are going up, 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 especially from fossil and nuclear power. And, by the way, nuclear power is another big piece of the Bush energy plan. They want to lay out $8.6 billion to help fund the building of a number of new nuclear plants, even though this is the most expensive technological failure in human history. And since September 11th, of course, these reactors are incredibly vulnerable to terrorist attack. Nonetheless, this energy plan would subsidize the construction of new reactors.
When's the last one?
Insane.
When's the last one that was built? Wasn't it like 30 years ago? Or
well, the last one that came online came on in the mid-90s at Watts Bar in Tennessee. But every reactor that was ordered from 1974 on was canceled.
Mm-hmm.
The Watts Bar plant took more than 20 years to build, and there's nothing under construction in the United States. Now, Western Europe is running away from nuclear power as fast as they possibly can. The only exception is Finland, which seems to have trouble keeping its all those saunas lit, but
no, it's the cell phones. You know how they are. Everybody's on a cell phone there. That's the problem. Tell us about and you mentioned that in your article at MotherJones.com, the article Free and Green, and Harvey Wasserman, the author, is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. You talk about the subsidies for the nuclear power industry. Right? I don't think actually nuclear isn't how it's pronounced anymore.
Oh, it's nuclear.
Nuclear.
Nuclear. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's N-U-C-K-U-L-E-R.
Yeah.
Is how it's pronounced.
Right. That's what I guess I hear from the guy in the White House. But go ahead.
Well, you know, atomic energy first of all, the prevalent fact, and I was on a panel recently speaking for Dennis Kucinich with representatives from the other Democratic candidates. It's quite interesting, actually. And, you know, there are all these esoteric arguments about nuclear power that are put out there. And Senator Kerry, by the way, you know, the likely nominee, his advocacy record on nuclear power is a bit mixed. He has supported it in the past, and I hope he's going to get over that. But he's also, I know, spent some time talking seriously about wind energy, and Bill McDonough, the great green architect, has been advising him. So we need to push on that front. But the reality is that the overriding reality about nuclear power is that on September 11th, the first jet that flew into the World Trade Center could have dived, God forbid, a minute earlier and hit the Indian Point nuclear plant 40 miles north of the World Trade Center, and we wouldn't be talking about a couple billion dollars worth of damage. We'd be talking about trillions and hundreds of thousands dead. I mean, there's just no way to protect a nuclear plant from the air. And the Bush administration has done absolutely nothing, not one significant thing since September 11th, to protect our nuclear plants. I mean, you know, why not just give Al-Qaeda nuclear weapons, for God's sakes? So, and now they're turning around and talking about building more. It's patently insane. It's beyond insane. It's beyond irresponsible. And the reality is that now, actually in Michigan, there are a number of, there's one major photovoltaic manufacturer, photovoltaics being the solar cells that you can put on your roof that will generate electricity right on your own home or your own office building, in Troy, Michigan, Unisolar, which has been around quite a while. There's a company in Tennessee, which is actually, near Toledo, which is actually owned by, the heirs of the Walmart fortune. And these technologies are booming. In fact, the biggest purveyor of photovoltaic cells in the world, ironically, is British Petroleum. You know, all those canopies they build now at the BP gas stations have photovoltaic cells on the top.
Right. You drifted a little, though. We were talking about subsidies for the nuclear power industry.
Well, but the point is that those subsidies to nuclear power are going to subsidize a technology that is absolutely counterproductive, that is expensive, even with the subsidies, more expensive than renewables, more expensive than even the coal, oil, and the gas, and that has been a proven failure, and which now after September 11th is absolutely, should be absolutely verboten because of the dangers of a terrorist attack. And so that's really the, in addition to that, by the way, in the new energy bill, the Bush energy bill, they exempt nuclear power plants, the owners of nuclear power plants, from any liability from a major disaster that could occur at one. So had there been a terrorist attack or even a mere meltdown at Indian Point or Fermi or any other nuclear plant that wiped out, you know, several thousand square miles and killed several hundred thousand people and done $1 trillion worth of damage, all which are very, very possible, the owner of the nuclear plant would have no liability beyond, you know, a few pennies here and there.
Well, Harvey Wasserman, tell us, you use this very eloquent analogy of combining Adam Smith and Rachel Carson that say that what you're talking about could make both of them smile. Remind us who both of them are in our history and why they would smile at the idea of alternative energies.
Well, Adam Smith, of course, was the great father of the free market economy and wrote his major book, Wealth of Nations, was published in 1776. And but Adam Smith was actually not very fond of big corporations. If you read through Wealth of Nations and the commentary on his life's work, you find that he was very suspicious of corporations as gaining too much power to overthrow markets and to deprive working people of a fair wage and of the access to their government. It's very interesting how he's been misused. But nonetheless, we use him as a thumbnail reference in advocating free markets. And I'm saying basically that because King Kong, coal, oil, nukes, and gas, got so much subsidy from the government that if we wiped up all those subsidies out, along with any small subsidies that are going with renewables, a free market, a truly free market, would give us a green energy situation. And simultaneously, Rachel Carson is invoked because I believe there needs to be a tax structure on pollution. So that the dirty oil, dirty fossil fuels, and nuclear sources that do so much damage to our oil and our water, to our air and our water and our health, they need to pay for that. And you know they're getting a free ride based on the destruction that they do to the environment, and that needs to end. And so in combination with an end to subsidies from the government, we also need an end to the free environmental ride that these fuel sources are getting. And so that's basically the marriage between Adam Smith and Rachel Carson. And in that situation, you know, we would have a renewable-based economy in a very, very short period of time, because solar and wind don't do, and obviously increased efficiency, don't do the damage to the environment. And at the same time, with a level playing field on subsidies, they would surge ahead.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is the posing of the Bush administration as the great boogeyman, and a lot of it, or maybe most of it, maybe all of it, I would say, in my estimation, pretty accurate. But the idea is, seems to be put forth, that if we elect a Democratic president, to probably the presumptive nominee, as they're calling him, is John Kerry, that suddenly we'll return to the golden age of the 1990s. Well, maybe speak to that. I mean, where the automatic defeat of Bush doesn't solve the problem in any way.
Well, we don't know that yet. All we know is it couldn't be worse. I mean, maybe it could be worse, but it's hard to imagine. And we know that Kerry knows a bit about wind power. We don't know where he's going to stand on nukes in particular, but anything would be better, we believe, than what we have now. I mean, this is the worst environmentally, this is the worst administration this country has ever had. The Bush administration has rolled back environmental policy to 1868 with the founding of Yellowstone. He's not merely reversed what Richard Nixon has done, or what John Kennedy did, or Franklin Roosevelt, or even Theodore Roosevelt. They've attacked Yellowstone, and that was the first national park in the world, actually, and Ulysses S. Grant set it up. And in the meantime, it's impossible to believe that John Kerry or any Democrat, or even any other Republican, pretty much, could be worse than these guys. They have absolutely devastated all forms of environmental protection. They've gone after the National Park System for its timber, its mining resources, the water, whatever else they can get. They're blowing mountaintops off in West Virginia to get at coal. It's not going to be automatically wonderful under John Kerry with the environment. It wasn't great, by the way, under Bill Clinton. I mean, Clinton was really very, very mixed on the environment, really didn't do much, did a lot of posturing, did a few things at the end of the regime there to help out Al Gore, but they were very, very weak on the environment. Carter was okay, Reagan was a nightmare, and actually people who've studied the Environmental Protection Agency look at the Nixon years as kind of the golden age of the EPA. So hard to believe, but true. But what did Nixon care about the environment? He actually happened to have some people in his administration, ironically leading among them John Ehrlichman, who did care about the environment. But there's no such animal in the Bush administration. That they care about the environment basically as a saleable commodity to raise campaign contributions, and that's about it.
We're out of time. Thank you so much, Harvey Wasserman. We didn't mention was this your first book, Harvey Wasserman's History of the U.S.?
It's being republished. People who are interested, go to harveywasserman.com.
And I'll get that.
Freepress.org is who I write for usually, and motherjones.com has that green and free energy bill and article. And Peter, it's great to talk with you. I'm certainly glad you're still on the radio, and let's keep plugging there.
Sure. Thank you, Harvey Wasserman.
Okay, Peter. Take care.
You're logged on at WRIF.com. We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like La Bisteca, located in Plymouth, proudly featuring certified Piedmontese beef. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Let Dr. Roach put your best pace and body forward with help from Dr. Roach.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF. .com.
Now, the Riff's ripping rock at 9 o'clock.
1 solid hour of your
and Bear.
With Meltdown, the big unit on the Rift.
Your opportunity to take control of the WRIF playlist
with the guy who lost control a long time ago.
Call in your Rift Rock and Roll requests to Meltdown at 313-298-WRIF or email them to meltdown@wrif.com.
The Rippin' Rock at 9 o'clock with Meltdown.
What a run. W-R-I-F.
We'll get back to more Rip Rock in just a moment. This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. Thanks for listening.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like La Scala, located in the heart of Windsor's famous Little Italy district, you can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit
at WRIF.com.
Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's five best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Got some great celebrity phone numbers we had to try them. First, we called the 49ers' Terrell Owens, and then Brian Urlacher's girlfriend, Paris Hilton.
You have reached the Sprint voice mailbox of
81.
To leave a voice message, press 1.
Terrell, this is Jeff Garcia. I just want to say I'm not supposed to have a little cry with you the other day. It was real nice seeing you cried, too, because I knew you cared. I love you. Bye, T.O. Giving him rides
before. Hey, it's Paris. My screen is broken on my phone, so therefore I cannot read any of the numbers on it. So make sure to leave a number with the message, and I will get back to you as soon as I can. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, Paris. It's 54 here. Big Brian. Just think about putting it in your butt. Boom. Always say PH. How about a big 5-4? Up the old Yeah, I was thinking to run a post pattern right up the middle. When I see a hole, you know me, I got to plug it up. Didn't mean to total a damn thing.
Good thing you love it.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
I hear you.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Rift.
That's good.
101
Monday, where we look at the world, and frequently we have authors on, sometimes political activists, so I don't know, a whole range of people that are looking at our world, trying to make sense of it, interpret it as they see it, hoping we'll share their view or their vision. And it's a pleasure in this regard to welcome back someone who interprets the world in a somewhat unusual manner. He's a cartoonist. He's Tom Tomorrow. The book is The Great Big Book of Tomorrow, A Treasury of Cartoons by Tom Tomorrow, and it is published by St. Martin's Griffin. Tom Tomorrow, whose name is also Dan Perkins, or maybe we should say it the other way, that your nom de cartoon is Tom Tomorrow. Dan Perkins, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Hi, thanks.
Yeah, this is kind of different. This is what, kind of a compendium of looking back over almost, what, 15 years of your work?
Yeah, I don't know, the publisher had the idea. They wanted to do it this way, and it seemed like a fun thing to do. It turned out to be a whole lot more work. Usually the books just collect 2 years worth of work, and it's fairly straightforward, but this, you know, I really did have to sit down and review everything I'd done that I still had copies of for, you know, the past 15 years.
You've had, this is then what, your sixth collection? Is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and it has it does have material. It's like one of those big oversized Peanuts or Garfield or any of those kind of treasuries. It has work from the smaller books that preceded it, and I do want to make that clear. It also has a bunch of new stuff and color section and all kinds of goodies.
You're like NPR's Andrei Codrescu in terms of this show. I always think I get him with every book he puts out, but he puts them out so frequently. I think the last book we talked about was The Wrath of Sparky.
Been a while.
Yeah, so you're odd penguin who
makes.
Yeah,
well, that's more probably to do with that probably gives you more of an idea of how much support I get from the publicity department, the publishers, than anything else.
Well, I have to tell you, I found out about your book. My wife and I subscribe to Working Assets as our long-distance carrier, and as you may or may not know, every month they have a reading list of suggested books, and number one, The Great Big Book of Tomorrow, A Treasury of Cartoons by Tom Tomorrow.
I knew they were doing that.
Yeah, so that's where I got turned on, so you can go... go tell the St. Martin's people they ain't on the ball with at least with me, but I'm in touch with them now. All right, let's.
Oddly, I'm not surprised to hear that.
it's peculiar. I've said to a couple people that I'm going to interview Tom tomorrow, and they kind of looked at me quizzically, and then I said he's the guy that does This Modern World, and they go, oh yeah. So the strip, I guess people probably know Blondie rather than its original. Drawer, right? So that makes sense.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I hear it the other way around too. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm. And if I can't remember what I said, but Tom Tomorrow's This Modern World appears weekly in the Metro Times here in Detroit, or you can go to the website thismodernworld.com and see a lot of Tom's work. Of course, I don't know, is every town like this Detroit, or is there such chauvinist about our, you know, about our city? So you spent some time in Detroit.
Well, I spent time in Royal Oak, actually, and, you know, I was 2 years old, so I wasn't exactly making the scene, I lived in Royal Oak until I was about 5.
We think it rubbed off on you, though. we take credit. Tell us, when you look at your work, you know, this goes back 15 years, and you know, when you grow up kind of with a cartoonist, in many ways I've seen, I can't remember when I first saw your work, and I would have said it didn't. The early stuff didn't look any different than the current stuff, because it evolves, and it usually gets, I don't want to insult your older. How would you say it gets a little more, not sophisticated, but...
Well,
it gets better.
Hopefully, if you spend 15 years doing something, you get a little bit better at it. I mean, I think that the work all pretty much holds up, honestly. But I do think that I have a better handle on what I'm doing, which is good because I'm 42 years old and I've been doing this for quite a long time. And if I didn't have a handle on it at this point, that would be kind of sad for all of us, really.
Sure. Well, yeah. I mean, they do get progressively better. In some ways, the drawings visually get sharper.
Yeah, I've gotten, well, again, you know, I spent a lot of time at it, and I've gotten better at what I do within the constraints of my own ability, which is modest. But I think there's a definite progression in the book.
Are you pleased that the older stuff is in there, though? I mean, or do you go like, ooh, I wish that wasn't in there?
No, there's not too much. There's not too much that really makes me grit my teeth. I like having the one volume that shows the whole progression. I think it's a neat thing, as Oliver North might have said.
I like it. In fact, I didn't notice this, and there's a wonderful cover. I wonder, maybe, I don't know if I can even...
Maybe hold it up to the microphone.
Yeah, I can't describe it. But the thing I like the best, in the background, they have little old Nash Ramblers kind of flying through the sky.
Very tiny detail.
And then there's characters of people that appear, including George W. Bush, who I remember I was talking, I think it was just last week, to... Jim Hightower on this program, and I was talking to him as a satirist, and he said, "Well, there's not a lack of material." And is it easier now with someone you politically oppose, as opposed to, I mean, not that you were a big Clinton fan, but because I remember you in here, you have Sparky lecturing Walter, telling him, "Wait a minute, you know, Clinton's not so great either." But,
yeah, and that's always there's always a danger in viewing Democrats as, I don't know, your saviors. On the other hand, we're in triage mode right now. This administration is you know, probably the most radical presidential administration this country has ever seen. And we just really need to get them out. We really do, honestly. And I think that ties into your question. Yeah, there's a lot of material. There's almost too much material. Now, that doesn't mean that the job is any easier, because I still am working to come up with something that is hopefully funny, and that seems to be a process that I don't really have a lot of control over, which is, so it still takes a lot of, effort, I guess, on my part. But the, you know, if you look through the book, for instance, a lot of the stuff during the Clinton years was about, was on topics that weren't necessarily on the front page at the time, maybe mm-hmm. slightly more obscure points about trade policy or healthcare or whatever. And it seems like for the last couple of years, the work I've been doing comes directly off the front page. There's no need to really dig too much deeper than that, because all the hypocrisy and lies are right there on the front page. And so it is, I suppose it's an abundance of material, but it's also, as a citizen of the country, you know, it's overwhelmingly depressing, especially when you're immersed in this pretty much on a daily basis. So, you know, I don't really wish, but sometimes I wish I had a job where I could just go and do something that had nothing to do with all of this, sometimes it's just really overwhelming. It would be nice to have a break from it in a way that normal people do.
I know, Ed, being a talk show host and an interviewer, I know what you mean. Tom Tomorrow is my guest. He's Dan Perkins, and his brand new collection is called The Great Big Book of Tomorrow, A Treasury of Cartoons by Tom Tomorrow. It's published by St. Martin's Griffin. And Dan, your your strip that appears in the Metro Times, the This Modern World, like the current one that's in this week, is a 6-panel, The Absolute True Story of George W. Bush and the War in Iraq. Tell us about working this up. I mean, how quickly do you do this? Is this, has this begun 3 weeks ago or 3 days
ago? Yeah, well, this one honestly was. Because the movie actually aired on Showtime 2 weeks ago,
right?
And if I'd really been on the ball, I probably would have done it that week, but I had this other idea that I was working with, and it got shelved. Then I came back to it, and I still liked the idea of doing that docudrama about September 11th was produced by Republican operatives, literally, and aired on Showtime, and I just really liked the idea of doing something further with that. Plus, I just had that image of Bush. In one panel, he pulls down a statue of Saddam Hussein personally with his teeth.
All right.
I don't know. I had that in my head. I wanted to use that.
Now, I'm looking at your website, thismodernworld.com, and the name of the strip, and it's in full color. Do you do the color work?
Yeah, I do a color version for the online places that, you know, like Salon, the places it runs online.
Okay, so then when it appears, like I'm looking at it in working. Working for Change.com.
Working for Change is the other main online venue.
Yeah, and so, but when it appears in the Metro Times, then it's black and white.
Right, because they're using black ink on white. I don't think they run too much in color.
Yeah, how much time does it take? I mean, this strip, which looks pretty intricate. I never realized also, or tell me if I'm right, some cartoonists have said that the lettering is really the bugaboo.
Well, yeah, and the little secret is that more and more cartoonists are actually going over to computer fonts, which is something that I did a few years ago, which makes it a lot. It simplifies that part of it. But this particular cartoon, I think I never did answer your question. Start to finish, when I actually sat down to write it for real, probably took 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, sitting down, writing it, drawing it, doing the black and white version, doing the color version. You know, I'm not the world's speediest artist, I would not do well if I had one of these jobs at a daily paper where I had to have the idea by 9 a.m. and have the finished cartoon by noon.
Is there a box filled of ones that you said, You know, I'm not letting this out to my distributor. I mean, do you ever seem good, but somehow things changed, or you just are there ones that don't make it?
Yeah, well, there's the occasional misfire. I don't know if you remember a few years back, the New York Times was running these ads which used anagrams for no apparent reason.
Uh-huh.
They're really dumb ads, and I eventually did do a riff on this using one of my characters, superhero named Anagram Man, but I wanted to do a more straightforward version, so I just did this straightforward six-panel cartoon of dumb anagrams. But if you hadn't seen the New York Times ad, you would look at this and think that I had lost my mind. And, you know, for instance, one panel was just, I don't know, dog equals God or something, because I was doing the stupidest anagrams I could think of as a riff on this ad. But unfortunately, when I looked at it at the end, what I had done was a really stupid cartoon. So I did pitch that one. But no, mostly I don't really have the luxury of the kind of time. You know, I mean, when I finish something, I'm usually up against a deadline and need to get it out.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're a two-time winner of the RFK Journalism Award for cartooning.
Well, it's mainly because they never saw that anagram cartoon, I think.
Okay. But your work has appeared in, like, The Nation, and you said Salon Online, also The New Yorker and The New York Times. But your political work, it's odd. It has very partisan character to it. So do editorial cartoons that appear in almost every daily publication, yet there seems to be, like, some, you know, in some quarters, offense taken to the left-of-center stance that comes out in your cartoons. It's sort of a strange double standard in a way.
Yeah, well, when I ran in U.S. News and World Report, the main response they got, their readers do tend to skew a bit older, a bit more conservative. It was just during Jim Fallow's brief experimental reign there. The main response that their readers, the main feedback they got from their readers was, this cartoon is biased, which, yes, right, that's because it's a political cartoon. Lately, I've had more subtle trouble. I found that before September 11th, I was able to get some fairly harsh, fairly biting stuff into The New Yorker. One of my last cartoons that ran there before September 11th had the Bush administration proposing it was a Swiftian thing. They were going to take the organs of the poor and give them to the rich, basically. Although it was much funnier, it had jokes and stuff. That was the basic idea. And I would have never gotten that in after September 11th. That magazine turned very, I don't want to say conservative, cautious, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And every idea that I pitched them, I could only get the most watered down stuff in. And the last cartoon that I got into The New Yorker was a cartoon about car alarms, and I looked at that in print and I thought, I don't want to be doing cartoons about car alarms.
Well, I think you've sort of answered my next question, is do you ever have an eye on market potential as opposed to what comes out of a sense of satire or indignation or desire for change?
Well, no, I would. I mean, with The New Yorker as a case in point, I guess I'd be perfectly happy to do car alarm cartoons occasionally. In this one, I proposed sort of an electronic collar that car alarm owners would wear around their neck, and any time the car alarm went off, it would give them an incredibly painful electric shock
okay.
until they turned the car alarm off. But I don't want that to be the only thing I can get in, and it just seemed like after September 11th, they were no longer... The editor, I should say specifically, the art director that I was dealing with was still quite the champion of my work, but the editor of the magazine was just no longer amenable to the sort of political work I wanted to do. I know that Art Spiegelman, who has a much longer and much more personal relationship with the magazine, also very publicly quit recently because he was having similar difficulties, so I know that it's not limited only to me.
Mm-hmm.
If I were concerned with marketing, I guess more than I am, you know, The New Yorker is certainly a very prestigious place to have one's work, and maybe I would work harder at doing, you know, car alarm cartoons, but I'm just not very good at it.
My guest is Dan Perkins. He draws under the name Tom Tomorrow, his nom de cartoon, and his latest collection from St. Martin's Griffin is called The Great Big Book of Tomorrow, Treasury of Cartoons by Tom Tomorrow. It's available at all bookstores. Start with your independent bookstore, please, and then, if they are not wise enough to have it, then do they have our permission to go to the big chains?
Yeah, I'm not suicidal. I prefer to support the independent bookstores, but unfortunately, that's not always reciprocated. So mm-hmm. I do want to sell the book, and if the indie doesn't carry it, then you know I have no problem with the chains.
You actually didn't even see this on the press release that I did get from St. Martin's. This is the definitive career retrospective of Tom Tomorrow. It's good, and also has a very interesting sort of self interview at the beginning.
Does it?
I think so.
I don't know what they sent out.
No.
I'm scared. What does it say?
No, I'm sorry. It is just a series of questions, maybe, that you ask yourself. You wrote this right at the beginning, the foreword.
What's that?
Tom, Dan. It's,
no, you're losing me. What are you saying?
Right at the beginning, there is the foreword.
Oh, those questions.
Yeah. That you've sort of asked yourself. Who
is
that, Tom Tomorrow?
That's
right.
In the press release.
Yeah,
I see.
Can your heart stand the shocking facts? Yeah.
Well, actually, I stole that from Ed Wood.
Oh, okay.
That's the opening to Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Let's go back a little to, you know, what's acceptable. Those of us who were critical about the war in Iraq that saw this all as a fraud. Geez, I don't know if you saw the New York Times today that they said, oh, I guess we made a mistake. There weren't any weapons of mass destruction. Well, all the critics of Bush in the run-up to the war said this was all a lie, said there wasn't anything there. Yet at the time, I mean, we were told, we were everything from unpatriotic to... soft on an aggressive dictator.
It was presented in a very binary sense that either you supported George Bush's vision of the war on terror, which was to say to go after a completely unrelated country that many of his cronies in the administration had been angling to invade since the mid-90s. The group, the think tank Project for a New American Century, counts among its alumni Cheney and Rumsfeld, Jeb Bush and Wolfowitz and Pearl. These people were publicly issuing policy statements since the mid-90s saying we need to invade Iraq so that we can get a foothold in the region because Saudi Arabia is an inherently unstable ally. And on the afternoon of September 11th, you've got Rumsfeld sitting in his office writing a memo that says, see if we can use this, I'm paraphrasing here, but effectively see if we can use this as an excuse to go after Saddam also.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fairly clear to any thinking person who actually looked at some of this stuff and thought about it that this was not the most effective way to go after Al-Qaeda. The choice we were given was either you support this battle in the war on terror, which is to say go after a completely unrelated country and don't actually go after Al-Qaeda really at all and in effect divert resources, or you're soft on terror. And it seemed, I think, to a lot of us that there really was a third choice in there.
Sure. We found out now, like the United Nations, who would have discovered, lo and behold, there were no weapons of mass destruction, hence Saddam Hussein was
not. Yeah, well, that was one of the other things, wasn't it? Give the weapons inspection a little more time to work, and maybe we would have found that out. Maybe
I think that's why Bush rushed to war, that they really knew. I mean, since this wasn't a mistake, it was a lie.
Well, yeah, there's also, I don't know if you've seen this, but there's also a tape floating around that Colin Powell admitted this in, March of 2001, something like that. John Pilger found this?
I think, in fact, it's, I don't know if I can do this while I'm talking to you, but I guess I can't, but I was going to just bring it up on the screen. Yeah, it's at Yahoo News that Powell telling somebody or other that they have successfully contained Saddam Hussein. He has no weapons of mass destruction, no capacity to invade any other country, and essentially has been neutralized.
Right. Yeah. And so here we are. And we've got, $1 billion a month and 300 dead American servicemen. Is it a week? $1 billion a week, 300 dead American servicemen. and really no clear way that we're ever going to get out there, and absolutely no support from any of our former allies. And I just, you know, it's a mess. It's a total mess.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not any safer from terrorism. And I say this as someone who lives in New York City. You know, I've got the big target painted on my behind. I mean, whatever
yeah.
happens, it will almost certainly happen here. You know, and this is where my family and my friends are, and I find it very annoying that we could have spent the last couple of years actually working to make ourselves safer, and instead the country went off on this tangent at the behest of people like Pearl and Wolfowitz.
Let's go back to This Modern World and
yeah, I sound like a wacky cartoonist, don't I? Rant.
You sound like me. You sound like me, or I sound like you. In fact, I believe it or not, I sometimes I don't know why I should say it like this. I mean, I say it like that because I try to keep abreast of things. But I've actually found stuff in your cartoons that, of all the work I do trying to keep abreast of things, that I didn't know existed. And I like it when you have one of the characters, you know, like in the White House, saying something, and then you have an asterisk and it says actual quote from.
Well, you need a way to, especially these days when satire and reality are almost indistinguishable. You need a way to distinguish them.
Certainly. Well, let me just ask you this, maybe as a final question. And you know, some of these cartoonists that did strips, that have done strips, or continue to do strips, like in the daily, what we call, you know, the comics section, some have done it for 30 and 40 years, and that's certainly a pleasure to the readers. Would you find this satisfying to do this this modern world, you know, on? Kind of ad infinitum. What is it?
Ad infinitum. When you say it that way, it does seem like a long road stretching out before me. It's hard to say. I still take pleasure in it right now, and have no immediate plans to quit. But who knows? I think I'm in it for the long haul. I think I'm the tortoise more than the hare. But at a certain point, you know. It's already a little bit strange to be doing this some 13 years after my real political work started running, and I'm doing almost the same cartoons. I'm doing cartoons about Iraq and a president named Bush and a tanking economy and a healthcare system that's falling apart. And I'm thinking, you know, I addressed all this in that cartoon 12 years ago. Weren't you people paying attention?
Well, let's hope.
So at a certain, you know, certain point, I just don't know how long I can piss into the wind.
Well, let's just hope that you're not drawing comic strips about President Jeb Bush.
Yeah, or Neil.
Neil, yeah, I guess he gets to be along there sometime.
Let alone Jenna.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You did a strip about that.
Yeah, well, I did a strip
That's
about
right.
the entire Bush dynasty ending up with clones and holograms just perpetually being in the White House far off into the future.
I stole that. That's okay. That's the greatest form of flattery, right? The New York Review of Books says about Tom Tomorrow's This Modern Life, the sharpest strip currently going. If you are a fan of This Modern World like I am, you can see it weekly in the Metro Times and other places online as well. A great place to see the scope of Dan Perkins' work is in this brand new book, The Great Big Book of Tomorrow, A Treasury of Cartoons by Tom Tomorrow. It's published by St. Martin's Griffin. Dan Perkins, Tom Tomorrow, thanks for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks for having me.
Night Call is a public affairs presentation of 101 WRIF Detroit. The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management or sponsors of WRIF Radio. Night Call is hosted every Sunday night by Peter Werby and produced by OD. Stay tuned for more Riff Rock coming right up on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Did you know that more than 44 million Americans don't have health insurance? Syed Healthcare is there to help provide primary health care for those in need. Now you can help too. Here's how. Join 101 WRIF for the Battle of Detroit's VIP Stars reception at the Hyatt Dearborn February 20th at 6:30. Meet Warrior Princess and live action figure Vera Vanguard, Michael J. White, star of Kill Bill 2 and Exit Wounds, plus Paul Gannis of Las Vegas and Days of Our Lives. Enjoy hors d'oeuvres, drinks, and photos with the stars. Tickets to this exciting event are just $100. All the evening's proceeds go to benefit Zion Healthcare. Also, make sure you don't miss the Battle of Detroit Martial Arts Championship at the U of M Dearborn February 21st. Get your tickets now by calling Julie at 734-347-1462. That's 734-347-1462.
Okay, so my friend Larry, Big Dummy, sees cool new bike I buy at Motown Harley-Davidson, says it's a total chick magnet. Larry's not very smooth. He'd have better chance with babes if he buys a bike like me. All our friends tell Larry, buy a bike at Motown! Buy a bike at Motown! So Larry, who listens like a stone, decides to shop competition. The other dealers all scream in his face, MSRP! MSRP! And Larry says, WTF. Then they tell him the price with an interest rate so large I thought they were quoting it in like pesos or rubles or Japanese yen or something. And his head explodes. Then I take friend Larry to Motown Harley-Davidson in Taylor. They tell Larry, compare a low monthly payment for low pay. And he says, no way. And they say, low pay. And he says, no way. And they say, low pay. And Larry says, okay. And now we are raiding our Harleys, and Larry has to fight off all the chicks with a stick.
Really, Larry? How?
And they think he's actually more macho. And his bald spot is shrinking. And he lost that spare tire around his tummy since he bought his bike at Motown. I hate Larry. The end!
For sales, specials, events, or just to look at cool pictures, log on to MotownHarley.com. Motown Harley Davidson in Taylor on Telegraph, just north of Eureka.
Remember, guys, chicks stick a guy on the real motorcycle. Buy a bike at Motown! Okay.
It's a never-ending quest for absolute perfection at Wild Woody's in Roseville. Wild Woody's and 101 The Riff have scoured all corners of Metro Detroit.
Great.
Every possible nook and cranny.
Got it.
Leaving no stone unturned.
Okay.
East side, west side, downriver.
Are you going to tell them about the Wild Woody's hottest booty contest or what?
Working on it.
Wild Woody's has what it takes during the dead of winter to keep things hot.
Party your ass off this Wednesday night with Bill Walters from 101 WRIF for Wild Woody's hottest booty competition.
Guaranteed to make these cold Michigan nights red hot.
Taking the party to a whole new level. Check out the lovely ladies of Crazy Horse,
formerly Pure Gold,
as they compete for cash and prizes from Priscilla's with 9 locations in Metro Detroit.
It's a feast for the eyes that you won't find anywhere else in the Motor City.
Take in the view while you knock back buck 50 bottles of beer.
And don't forget, Wednesday night at Wild Woody's, ladies pay no cover whatsoever.
Get a little crazy and play wild games for killer prizes.
Now, Wednesday nights at Wild Woody's are bootylicious.
Oh,
bootylectable.
Knock it off.
Booty.
We got the point.
Okay, I'll move on.
It's your one surefire chance to keep things hot this winter.
Wild Woody's hottest booty contest this Wednesday night.
Wild Woody's on Gratiot, south of 14 Mile in downtown Roseville.
For more info, call 586-294-5331.
Wild Woody's. Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708. Prolong the pleasure, maximize the control, and see how much longer you last with Maxtral. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708.
More nonstop riff rock coming up next.
So David, I know you do all kinds of loans, but what about the larger loan amounts? Can you handle those?
You talking to me?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. You're the mortgage expert. Of course you can handle those.
Absolutely. How about up to $1 million? Very little.